big black Quaker City bookie wookie.
Well, all right. Welcome to the State of Games, a proud member of the Punch Board Media Content Network. I'm Dice Hamey.
I'm Get Louder.
I'm Puppy Shogun.
And we are a podcast all about anything and everything related to board and card games and more. So welcome to episode 142, or as we like to call it, the one about unplugging.
Wow, I wonder what it's about.
Yeah, I wonder. So as many of you might guess, this podcast topic is going to be about the newest PAX Endeavor Unplugged, which happened in Philly a week ago. So we were all in attendance, and we thought it would be good to talk about what went down in its first year, our initial impressions, and anything else that seems like useful info. This podcast is going to be a bit stream of consciousness, and the whole thing is essentially the meat. So let's get on with it. First of all, happy late Thanksgiving.
Friendsgiving.
How was it?
My Thanksgiving was good. I went to Massachusetts and had Thanksgiving with my grandmother and my aunt and my cousin and her kids. And more or less went up to have Thanksgiving with my grandmother. Right. And it was awesome. It was a really good trip. It was kind of planned like 4 months ago. And honestly, the closer it got, we were like, oh, we got to drive 6 hours to Massachusetts. Oh, the traffic and all that. But actually, it was really nice. The weather, everything about it was awesome. So it was a really good Thanksgiving.
Did you have a traditional Thanksgiving feast with oysters and pheasant and stuff like that? Or
No. Nothing like that. Nothing crazy. Some of them in the family are very picky eaters, so it was the traditional turkey stuffing, you know, everything very traditional.
Right, spam and mac and cheese. Right,
I hear. Yeah, that. Yeah, you got it.
Awesome, TC. What'd you do?
Well, we went out this year to eat, which is different. We didn't go to the truck stop this year, if you remember.
Yes,
I think that was that last year or 2 years ago?
A couple of years ago, if I recall, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago we went to the truck stop and I talked about that one. But nope, I did not get my food in a frying pan, so I was unhappy a little bit. However, we had, because we went to this place, it was like the Red Lion Hotel, we went like to their basement and it was this huge area and we had to wait for a table, and when we walked in, it was just packed and it was huge. Like there were so many tables going on at the same time. I was kind of surprised because it's Thanksgiving. I didn't expect so many people going out to eat, but we had a reservation. It was cool. And they had a spread. It was buffet style. So they had this spread of like all breakfast food. So you get all this breakfast food you want, all the waffles you could eat. So it was like, they even had like the continental breakfast station set up in the corner. That was funny. Then they just had like all the Thanksgiving stuff in one row. Then they had, they started their seafood rows, and there was just rows of seafoods and weird things like apple butter pork and mixed in with lobster soup and crabs and clams and all kinds of stuff. And I had little neck clams, which are all those, the fancier ones. They're tiny.
Oh, so yeah. I call them little fancier. Tiny ones. They are fancy. They're like little, you have to eat them with the little tiny fork.
Exactly. And they don't fill you up at all. And you'd have to eat like 10 million of them before anything would get into your stomach. So it was good. It was great. And then they had turkey. They had it sliced. Someone was slicing it. You could get, they had a pierogi station, which is pretty,
pierogi
pretty awesome.
Station. Yeah, pierogi sounds station. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and we're Pennsylvania Dutch area, so that sounds about right. Right. So, I had a really good meal. I mean, I just like the fact that I ate a lot of haddock at a Thanksgiving meal, and that's great. That's great for me.
Haddock, that is so healthy.
Yeah.
Was it fried at least, or was it like...
No, it wasn't even fried.
It wasn't even fried?
It was rolled around something else, had a little Old Bay sprinkled on the top, which we were talking about as possibly either... I like Old Bay a lot. I know Daryl likes Old Bay a lot. So you can pretty much just cover it in Old Bay.
Oh,
but anytime you sprinkle just a tiny bit on it, I'm like, I think they take away a little class.
It overpowers. It easily overpowers.
Yeah, I want not a little bit. I want a ton and just say it's Old Bay haddock or something. Not like, I'm going to put a sprinkle. So there's sparkles on it. So anyway. And apparently they must have had a prom the night before or something because there was sparkle, like glitter everywhere
what,
on
seriously?
All the chairs.
They must
glitter
have,
everywhere.
Maybe it was a Thanksgiving pageant.
I wasn't there for the glitter bombs, but yeah, it may be.
Well, my Thanksgiving was action-packed, and I mean that literally. I just stayed home. because Lillian was in Hawaii, and I just decided to stay home, and I ate smoked brats and green beans and watched The Punisher all day long.
Wait, you didn't go to your mom's?
Nope.
Nice.
I didn't.
Man,
we're doing deferred Thanksgiving. We're doing that a little bit later. So,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But we decided just low-key Thanksgiving, and, well, Matt and Marcy Wolf were kind enough to invite me over, but I'd done conventions, I was tired, I'd worked most of the week. I was like, I'm just going to take a me day. I just threw some Arlo Guthrie on for a little bit, and then cooked up some stuff, and then watched The Punisher all day long, which was amazing, by the way.
We didn't even get a chance to listen to Arlo Guthrie. That's the problem. Oh, that is the problem with Thanksgiving this year.
That's right.
Failed completely. Anyway.
So
next year.
Well, you got to do it. I mean, it's a tradition.
It is. I mean, Alice's Restaurant every year. But whatever. I missed it. I'll just have to listen to it whenever I normally listen to it, which is anytime I want to.
I did do something the day before, which is usually my tradition. I usually try to watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So I got that on at least. Because it's literally the best Thanksgiving movie ever made.
I mean, there's not many
ever made.
Well, there might not be many, but it's the best. That's all I'm saying. It still holds up. It's still hilarious. I mean, it's got some remnants of the 80s, of course, because there's no cell phones, and you know, you're a slave to the public transportation and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles conceit. And of course, it's got a lot of road trip tropes. But it's still hilarious because Steve Martin and John Candy are at the top of their game. They're working with, no disrespect for the late, great John Hughes, but it wasn't his finest script. It was still funny, but they're two comedians doing their absolute best to make sometimes unfunny situations into hilarious situations. Anyway, if you get a chance to watch it sometime, I recommend usually the day before Thanksgiving is pretty good. So anyway, we're done talking about Thanksgiving. Let's move on. We're gonna talk later about some of the games we might have encountered or played at Unplug. But for now, have you been playing anything before, during Thanksgiving?
We actually had TC down to the house for a couple days prior to Thanksgiving and everything. It was during the game-a-thon that you did, which I know you'll be talking about. So I was able to hijack TC from driving all the way down to North Carolina. I said, hey, just come to my house instead. We'll play all the great new Euros.
Yeah, you stole them.
We didn't play any of the great new Euros. But, anywho, we still had a blast. I played Favelas at Thanksgiving. So this is the first time I actually got that to the table since acquiring it Spiel. And, yay, I still love it. No surprise. I've played Miss Tacos with my son Ethan. That's a game I picked up at Spiel, and it's a dexterity game where you're stacking chairs, and it's kind of a balancing dexterity type of game. So that's a lot of fun. It's only three players, which is the really weird thing about it, because only three color chairs. So I was like, well, that's kind of odd. It's two or three players, but it's perfect. Leslie, me, Ethan, we play it, go nuts, and there's that. So TC was down. And so I think the first game TC and I played, we played Tokyo Highway, second edition, which is more of an exercise than it is a game. But that's not, I don't mean that as an insult, because I still very much enjoyed the game. But it's definitely more of an exercise than a game. But, you know, it was good. Once we kind of realized how the rules are telling us to play about
together.
Well, see, that's the point. That's the whole thing. Like, we broke out Tokyo Highway when I first got it, and I couldn't suss out the rules at all. I knew you had to build, I mean, I understand like the different tiers, and you put your popsicle sticks between the tiers, and then you have to balance, you know, but the thing is like, what is the sequence that you do that in? How do they overlap each other? Where do you put your little cars? I mean, it's just completely vague in the rule set, which I know is a translated rule set.
Yeah, it's very directly, like, it's written in such, like, casual, awesome English. It's, like, so specific
right.
And doesn't tell you anything.
Doesn't tell you anything how to play. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, that was, we did that. I know TC's going to talk about some games, too. So, we also played Flamme Rouge with the Peloton expansion, which I really liked because we had five players, so we were easily able to play that. And I liked it. I know that some people still have issues with uphill and drafting and such, but I dug the hell out of it. I like how the track goes to three spaces wide at some points, and the cobblestone adds like that unique midway between downhill and uphill. So your minimum speed is 5, but there's no drafting because it's cobblestone. Because you would just be like, I'm trying to catch. Oh, yeah, I can't do that because you're just, you know, yeah.
I also like that the person in the lead, we were playing with 5 people, and the person in the lead, Nikhil, he just kind of got, like, he petered out. Like, he couldn't make the last, he had one last turn to go, and he couldn't make it to the lead. So, that to me, that's good, because I had not played a game yet where someone couldn't just store one, you know, like, have that one left over. And so it was good to see someone just peter out and not be able to make that final push. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, also, I did that the last time I played.
No, it was fine. So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I still very much love that game. This hasn't deterred that at all. Not that I had the concern that it would. But there's a little one-lane track segment that came in the advent calendar from Frosted Games, so I'm going to have to look to acquire that because I think it's going to be worth it just to put it in the mix of everything. But there's so much track now that they give you more track suggestions, but I know that you can build even a bigger track, so I kind of want to do that.
All right, TC, well, tell me about your trip to Daryl's and anything else you might be playing.
We had a lot of stuff that happened in the last few weeks, right? I mean, other than just PAX and stuff.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So I went down to Daryl's, my friend Daryl's house, and
he sounds like a cool guy.
I don't know.
But what was cool was we had Luke too, because Luke got to come down, and Luke hasn't been around for a long time.
Yep.
So we played with my friend Luke, and Daryl's friend Nikhil came over, and we played games. And so we had an aborted Time Stories game, which we won't talk about, but we got like two times through the Time Stories thing, and we had to stop, and then we didn't pick it back up again. I'm kind of I want to play it again now.
Yeah, me too.
I gotta figure out
which story was it.
What dragons were dancing?
Dragon or prophecy.
Prophecies. Also, I was thinking of Dance of Dragons. I don't know why I was thinking dancing, but we played Azul. So Daryl taught us Azul, and we played Azul 3 times during the course of the weekend, and I like it. I don't love it. I don't hate it. I'm somewhere in the middle on it.
Was it you or Daryl in the last podcast that were on the fence about it, talking about how edible the pieces were? Is that Daryl?
That was me. I said it looks
like
Starburst pieces.
Yeah, okay. All
right. But you still like it though, Daryl, right?
I do like it. It is about it's a little more advanced than Century Spice Road. So,
yeah, I feel like I like it, but I don't love it, right? So, if that's fair, like it's very just it feels very abstract, and I do once I played it one time, we got everything down. I felt like my second game was where I implemented that strategy, and then I didn't feel like the third. Like then we played it again, and it was like, oh, I'm just doing the same strategy again. All right. And so it is what it is. Hey, but hey, I didn't love it, but I liked it. But I did absolutely phenomenally. And Daryl, I think, has finally got me to want a Switch more than anything at this point because of Mario Odyssey. Because at first, I said even on Twitter, I played it for like 10 minutes and was like, I don't know, these controls are just weird. Like they make me feel like a 2-year-old, which they do at first. But once you get over that thing that I can't change the controls to make it better for me. It was just, I don't know, it's the best game ever. I was one of the best games I've ever played for an hour, 2 hours. It's so good. I don't understand why everyone doesn't own this game. It's so, like, it is literally the best game you'll ever play. So I don't know how games get better from that, so let's just stop there. We'll cut it off at Mario Odyssey.
It was pretty cool because, like, typically, you know, being a parent, as any parent that listens to this understands, you have friends come over the game that don't have kids and don't quite get the whole, like, I got to go to bed now because I'm going to have to be up super early tomorrow with the kids. And I always feel bad whenever you guys come up because I have to kind of do that because I can't rely on Leslie to be the one that always gets up early. And you guys understand it now at this point. But with the Switch, I was like, all right, TC, I'm going to go to bed. Here's the Switch. We got Mario Odyssey. I recommend you try it out. He's like, okay. And then, like, the next morning, he's like, yeah, that was really good.
I'm building it up in my head more, I think, even, too, now that I haven't got to play it for a while. Yeah. But I played Zelda, and I was like, Zelda's good. I enjoy Zelda. You can spend a lot of time playing it. It's great. But Mario is just dense. It's like, whereas for me to get to the next thing, and like, this is so not a board game podcast, whatever. I don't care. Mario Odyssey is worth it, because the new Breath of the Wild game, you would just go off on an adventure and you could just walk to anywhere on the horizon, which is kind of cool. But there are some times where you're just walking or climbing, and you just go on forever, and you don't really find anything, like maybe for a while. Whereas Mario, it's like, you go to this building. Hey, there's a building there. I'll walk in the front door, and there's something on top of the building, and there's something in this side of the building, and then you can crawl underneath the building, and then somewhere else, there's a tunnel that goes underneath that building, like, and everything is intertwined, and there's like 35 different stars in this one building, and then right beside it is another one. And it has all that same stuff. It's so dense. You just find new stuff all the time. It's ridiculous.
Well, see, this is the thing. Like, I'm not... When the Switch first came out, I knew I wasn't going to buy it. I just couldn't justify it. Because not only it didn't launch with a Mario title. But now I'm just like, and I know. I don't know that when I'll get it. But I'll have to play it first. So when we come for Christmas, I'll play it. And
you
can
play
it.
You play it. If you play it for 5 minutes, you'll be like I was. You'll just be like, oh, this is okay.
Right.
Whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But you get into it for an hour, you're just like, I don't know why I would stop playing this game ever. So
between that and Breath of the Wild, I mean, it's solid. So solid. And TC or Chris, I expect when you come up in December, you're going to play it, and then like the next morning, you're going to be like, so what time's Target open? You think they have a Switch in stock?
Yeah. So I don't want to spend the whole podcast talking about Mario Odyssey, but at the same time, really, really excellent. And it also was an inspiration to me as game design, because I've been working on a lot of story stuff where you have something change the mechanics of the game through story. And this Mario Odyssey just is brilliant. Like the thing you are, that dense thing that I was talking about, like you're not just doing the Mario thing to get those moons or whatever. Half the time there's some new thing that they introduce just for a second, just to be like, here's some new sprinkle of like magic and it's a whole new like mechanic that you're working with for like just a few minutes. And then like, maybe it'll come up like 10 hours later, but like, it's just, like, yes, creativity out. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. I don't know. Anyway, Mario Odyssey is good. The other game that I played that's not good and will never be good is Monopoly Gamer.
Terrible
game. Don't tell me that Monopoly Gamer is fixing Monopoly, because if Monopoly is fixed by just making it so that instead of moving by rolling two dice, you roll one die and then you just throw coins at each other all day, it's not fixed. It's a 2-minute game that lasts 45 minutes. It's terrible. It's bad. Never. They forced me into playing this game. They guilted me and I had to play it. And it was,
hey, when you come, you have to play at least one game with Ethan, and that's the game he chose. So
I would play anything else,
dude. Ethan, it could have been worse.
Need to grow up. Need to tell your son to grow up.
TC, it could have been worse. You could have had to play that stupid Yo-Kai Watch game that I had to suffer through. The Yo-Kai life. Yes. Oh.
Now I will say he's been desperately wanting to play Mansions of Madness again.
So, that's quite the show.
Yeah, so he's getting a little better with his taste. But I will say, Monopoly Gamer, why? They just, don't tell me, people, that this fixes things when there's like inherent game design problems with Monopoly that have not been fixed. So it doesn't fix it. It just makes it faster. That's it. It's really bad. It's a really bad game. It's a really bad game. Can I say it again? It's a really bad game. Monopoly Game is terrible. I would rather. Anyway. Hey. We probably played some other games. I can't remember every one of them, so I'm not going to go into any further. But Friendsgiving, I had a Friendsgiving dinner just like last night with a group of people, my normal gaming group, with like Rob and Ebi and Kara and Anna, and we played a few games. We played Illimat, which I saw like on display at PAX Unplugged.
Yep,
and didn't get a chance to play.
I saw that.
It's like.
Yep.
Decemberists, which the band that I like, the Decemberists, and Keith Baker making a game. I thought it was okay. it's not really made a game made for me, but it was like the definition of meh. It was just, it looked cool, and then it just kind of was an abstract card game, and it wasn't very interesting. But on the other side of that, for an abstract card game that I did enjoy, that was Ladder 29 from Ben and Matt, which I'd never got to play at the as a prototype. But with five players, for a climbing game to work with five players so well, super thumbs up. It was really good. My whole group really enjoyed playing Ladder 29, and that was super good. Onami was possibly the worst game I've played in a long, long time. That game's real bad. Onami, O-N-A-M-I. I don't know why anyone... Don't look it up. I don't know why you'd look it up. It's really bad.
Is it better than Monopoly Gamer, though?
Whew, dude. Oh.
That's a yes.
No, I'm going to say no. It's not.
Oh, wow.
It is not. It's worse than Monopoly Gamer.
That's pretty bad.
And I gave Monopoly Gamer a 2. And that was a generous 2.
A 2.
It's faster than Monopoly. That was a 2 out of 10.
That's pretty bad.
Nami might get a 1. It's everything that's bad about things. I'm not even going to go into it. Whatever. And I played... Okay, and I also played Kokoro, Avenue of the Kadama, which is like the Avenue re-implementation.
It's Avenue, game. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I've never played Avenue, so this was new to me. So,
did you enjoy it?
I had a lot of fun. But I like those games. You just like, you draw a card or roll a die, and everybody gets to do the thing that's on the thing. And... it worked really well. I just happened to do so well in the first game that I don't know where I'm going to come back to. Because in the game, you have to draw a road from building to building. And as the game goes on, the farce of it is your first building, which is randomly flipped, that will score. You have to score a certain amount. You score a certain amount of points. You have to score at least 1 point, or you'll get like -5. But then after that, you have to score more than the last
in
building.
In the previous build, you're right. Yeah.
So... so you have to kind of, and you don't know what's coming out. So you don't know what to build ahead for. And so I just was like, whatever, I don't know what to build for. So I never looked at the cards. I just built, like, I just started laying down roads on every single one so that I would know what to do. And by the end, I had a line that started in one end and went the whole way around the board and came back to the other side and got everything.
Dude.
And so I just, so yeah. Many points.
It you wasn't totally even... Forrest Gump the game is what you did, because that's the way to do it. Because people who play, I played Avenue quite often, and people who play Avenue that score high, like super high, that's exactly what they do. They take the most optimal spot, and they don't really pay super close attention to what scores that round. Because like you might score a couple points there, but all you have to do is do like 1, 3, 5, and blah, 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 until you get to the end where you score like 180 points, and then it's just like, it's nuts. Yeah.
So I'd be curious to try that game again with a bunch of like hardcore Avenue players.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Are there any hardcore Avenue players?
Because I probably, there are a few that min-max that game quite a bit. So, yeah. All right. Fun. So, for me, we had the 24-hour board game marathon, which Daryl mentioned earlier. That's the TC didn't come down. TC got stolen to go up to Daryl's, but it was probably a shorter trip. In the long run, though, the board game marathon, which I've mentioned several times on the podcast before, is always a tradition. It's a great time. Dan Patrice of the Geek All-Stars puts that together for the Turner Syndrome Society, and we basically raise money for the Turner Syndrome Society, and it is a blast. We start at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning, and we game all the way to 8 a.m. on Sunday morning, and we're frazzled by the time we get to Sunday morning, but it's just awesome. But I'll mention that I played a few interesting games there. First of all, the Expanse board game. Have either of you watched or read the Expanse?
No.
Okay, so I'm not really going to be talking very much about fans, but fans of the Expanse, I've only read the first book, but the sci-fi series, which I have not seen, there are a lot of people who say it's just a great series. It's a great implementation of the actual book series. I don't know enough to be like a fan of it. I only know what I've read from that first book. Playing the board game was interesting because it's like a little... It's basically an area control game, and there are different rings around. Basically, there's Earth and the Mars, and then you go into like the asteroid belt, and you go into the outer ring, which is Saturn and Jupiter. And there are different factions that have kind of home bases in those different spots. And you're essentially every turn drafting a card to either keep to use for its special ability, to use for a special ability, or to use its action points. And the action points are to, you know, shift or move your ships over to another spot, to put influence tokens down on a planet, And as you progress throughout the game, you also get to do small tech trees. So it's a very streamlined game. Depending on your faction, you're going to have different tech trees. But the middle tech tree that you all hit at once is basically space warfare. So now that instead of just going around and do different things, now you can fight. And when you fight, you can blast people out of the sky and they lose like a ship and they have to rebuild it and so on and so forth. It's got a couple of cutthroat moments to it. As far as like abstracting the whole space, expanding space and influencing planets and doing the politics of things and deciding how you draft a card and how you use that card, it actually works pretty well. I will say that it has a few slightly frustrating moments with it. I wasn't 100% happy when I was through playing the game, but I did not necessarily not enjoy my play of it. I'm glad we were able to get it to the table. The whole table presence of it's WizKids, by the way. And it comes in a smaller... what you get out of the box doesn't seem like it'll fit in the box, but it fits perfectly. It's like a Dice Hate Me Games production. I'm just going to toot my own horn. But it's pretty cool. And it's so... Other than using images from the sci-fi series... It's so minimal in its type of layout, but it captures that sort of pseudo-futuristic look to it that was pretty effortless on the part of the designer, that it works really well. And each faction plays differently and has different abilities, which I really like. But, it does have a slight, what I called Tammany Hall effect, which is when you start to get that leader, it's very, very hard to catch that leader unless you work with every single person at the table to catch the leader. And at that point, the person who was in second place was not 100% willing to work with me and James, who were trailing at the end. James and I finally realized halfway through the game, was like, we got to just cut our ties, not working. Cut our differences and start working together, or we were going to lose this game. So we did. We didn't mess with each other. We did as much as we could to minimize points during scoring rounds and try to jump ahead, but it just wasn't enough to catch the leader. So Doctor Who, Time of the Daleks. So, Daryl, you've talked about this before, and you got so excited, and you were like, this is like Elder Sign, but like semi-cooperative and all this different stuff.
I said the Elder Sign on Cracked.
On Cracked. Yeah, that's what you said. I don't know what to make of this game. I don't. No, I'm serious. Okay, Daryl's throwing up his hands, but before you do that, listen to this. Listen, I love the concept of the game. It is playing as a, especially as a Doctor Who fan, he's going to commit spooku online here all of a sudden. No, as a Doctor Who fan, like the theme, obviously Gale Force 9 does it with theme. They get the theme. You start out as one of the generations of the Doctor. In the box, you got the first generation, fourth generation, 11th and 12th Doctors. So yeah, I started out as the fourth Doctor. Obviously Tom Baker's my Doctor. So anyway, we played four players. And so at a certain point during the game, you're going on missions and having temporary companions that can become permanent companions with you. And you've got some companions in the game that actually synergize with yourself and other companions. But what's kind of cool about the game is that you might have a point where a doctor regenerates. And when that happens, everybody at the table, especially in a four-player game, just shifts doctors. They all regenerate. And so you become, like, I became the 11th Doctor out of the 4th. And so now, you know, I had Sarah Jane, and now Sarah Jane doesn't know, oh, Matt Smith's here all of a sudden. What do I do with that, you know? They don't synergize as well. And then you also have to do semi-cooperative stuff where you know you can't beat certain missions or you know, adventures that you go on. So you've got to ask for help for the other Doctors, which is super fun. But the problem with the game is it's so freaking hard. The Daleks are kicking your butt left and right. And I'm like, you know, it's cool because it emulates like how difficult and how random some of the Doctor's adventures can be. But in the end, the Doctor usually pulls it out. Well, in this game, at least my first play, there was no freaking way we were pulling out the win on this thing. The Daleks killed us. And yeah. So I definitely want to play it again, and I really definitely, I'm glad that I played it four players because it feels like a game that works really well four players, because you have to have these shifting alliances between the Doctors and calling them in for help and lots of variety as far as how them out. I don't know how it plays two or three players. Daryl, what did you, in your demo, how many players did you play? Do you remember?
Three. The demo didn't play, so three. Okay.
All right. Yeah. And it played, as far as the shifting alliances and different things, did it play all right that way?
Yeah. Jen, with Grander Than Games played with me mm-hmm. as well. And yeah, she her character actually died, so we actually did the regeneration thing. And we did, I think we each played about four turns into it. And yeah, I mean, it was very evident how hard the game was, but I also kind of liked about how hard the game was.
I like the fact that it was hard because you did have to call on help. It was quite obvious, and perhaps we realized that too late into the game, but I mean, I was leading. I was actually going and doing the right things to try to lead by the time the game ended, but it was clear that I was never going to catch the Dalek ship on its way to Gallifrey. Because it was just way too far ahead, and we had too many of these really, really difficult adventures that are out there that just didn't close. Again, the concept of the game is absolutely amazing. The obviously, the components are awesome, and the art's amazing.
Yeah.
And the theme is great, which is what is a hallmark of Gelfrost 9. But I've got to play it, you know, definitely a few more times to get... I want to be able to win it. I want somebody... I don't want necessarily need to be me, but I just need a doctor to be able to win the game. Without it being evident, the Daleks are just crushing us. So,
yeah.
I'm going to skip and just say Black Gold. I played. This is an FFG release from a couple of about 3 or 4 years ago. It has amazing components, especially like these little oil rigs or oil derricks that pop up that you build, and they have the little plastic, you know, gold, black gold or oil spouts that come up depending on how big or small the thing is. Man, Lillian laid waste to us because. All she did was ride up the right-hand side, and every single derrick that, you know, you're kind of prospecting for oil, and every single one she hit was, like, the maximum thing from that. But she was making really good choices as far as, like, how to invest that. It is sort of an auction game, as well, or a bidding game, rather. And so learning when to bid, when to sell, how much to store. I had a lot of fun, but it was pretty clear about midway through the game. There was no way the rest of us were going to come any close to winning. So like any kind of bidding or auction game, sometimes it can get a little bit out of sync. But it was fun. I love the concept of the game. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was also like last year for the holiday sale, it was on sale for like $10. So if you like... a game that's got awesome components and has bidding in it.
And it's super dry.
It is pretty dry. except when you get soaked with
you like grids,
sweat.
Too. If you
yeah,
like
you
grids.
Gotta love grids. Grids. But you do, but to make it less dry, you are driving little trucks around the grids. So
that's true, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's not that bad of a game. Dracon is another Fantasy Flight game release that was on sale last year and the year before and the year before. Anyway, they've released like five different versions of this game. It's pretty random, too, and you're drawing tiles, and basically you're trying to walk your little adventure that has one special ability can be used during the game, trying to collect these little gold pieces, and everybody... It's a little bit like Wiz War. I don't know if anybody out there has ever played Wiz War, but Wiz War is an old classic that can be sort of random, and you're trying to stop people from doing this. You put tiles down, and you just... It's... Anyway.
Sounds like my type of game.
Oh, yeah, you would love it, TC. I know you're a huge fan of Wiz War, I can tell.
I am, yep. My favorite game.
But my favorite game from the Board Game Marathon, which I'll talk about for 1 second, is Fury of Dracula. So this was one that I wanted to try to get on the table at my Halloween party. And I've been wanting to get it on the table for years, but I've just never had a chance to. Brian Delco had a copy there of his third edition copy. And this is the latest edition of Fantasy Flight. I have the second edition at my house, and I knew that it was much more streamlined. So I had read through the second edition rules. I sat down and read through the third edition rules real quick, just glancing through it. And I said, okay, I'll play Dracula. So we actually got a full five-player count game of Dracula, Fear of Dracula going in. Our tradition at the Board Game Marathon is to start a really long, heavy game at midnight. This is the best way to stay awake, by the way. And so Fury of Dracula, it is, it works. It's awesome. This Fury of Dracula game lasted 5.5 hours. It was amazing. And we were engaged the whole time. And like, I mean, it was just, playing as Dracula was, it was just so fun. It takes Letters from Whitechapel and ratchets it up to 11. And then you have the card play mechanics. You've got the hiding mechanics. You've got special abilities for Dracula. You've got combat that can happen when Dracula gets caught. And it came down to basically you play over like three rotations of Dracula's travels. And when you come down to the third, if Dracula hasn't won by that point or hasn't been taken out, then you start getting, Dracula starts getting influence points based on how many different days he lasts. And you get different influence points by putting cards down that can mature into vampires. Dracula's trying to get 13 influence before he's taken out, or the hunters all try to converge on Dracula and take him out during combat. And during the game, I got involved in combat like 3 different times, and I barely escaped each time. Like, the first 2 times was... the first one was, I had done a great job of hiding for, like, God knows how many turns. They finally caught my trail, and they managed to catch me in one spot, and I was, like, a little bit cocky. I was like, nah, dude, I got this. They almost got me, man. It's hard. Like, the hunters are tough, especially after they get built up. And I escaped from them. I went to another combat. I barely escaped from that one, and I finally ended up right at the edge of the end of the game. I cornered Mina Harker. And she's already bitten. So in the game, if you're bitten again, you're immediately just, you know, you not die, but you're out of the combat. And so it also gives you a couple of advantages. But so Mina's there. And so in order for the hunters to win, Mina's got to win. And I've got to defeat Mina to get my last point of influence and move on and win the game. And it was just down to the wire. Playing card after card, and you know, just you play this versus this, and you have symbols that match that cancel each other out, and it was epic. I can't say enough about this game. I know most people would be like, 5.5-hour game, what are you talking about? No, this was amazing.
Wait, and so did you win?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. I pulled it off because I finally
you said you encountered her, but then you didn't say
I did.
And I killed her.
I finally got a bite in when she didn't defend against a bite. And the bite, of course, took her out of the combat because she's bitten already. And so I ended up winning. But everybody who played the game said they had an amazing time. I played it with Chris Mitchell and with Matt Wolf and James Myers and Brian Delk. And they did a really, really good job as the hunters. But playing Dracula, I can't wait to play this game again. I can't believe I waited this long to play it. The only problem, of course, it's 5.5 hours. Unless, of course, you get cornered and lose in like 1.5 hours or whatever. And last on my list, before we move on to some news hits and other games we might have played at Unplugged, is that I finally got my Kickstarter copy of Dogs in. And so Dogs is one of these new... It's like all of a sudden the hotness, the games about dogs. But it was on Kickstarter a few months ago. And there was a $200 pledge level to get your dog's name in the game. And for whatever reason, I was feeling like I'm going to immortalize Bubba's name in the game. And so there are bulldogs in the game. And it's like, okay, I'll back it at that level. And so Bubba's in the game. And so Lillian and I played it this weekend after she got back from Hawaii. And it's a game. It wasn't bad. It wasn't knock your socks off great, at least at 2 players. But it has a lot of promise, and I think that actually it's going to be more interesting the more players you add into it. You play 2 to 4. And the conceit of the game is you're going around through the city. You have to drive through the city or the country. In order to get to the country, you've got to drive through the city, out into the country. You've got to manage how much gas you're putting into the truck to go out and rescue these dogs. You bring them back to your kennel. You've got to be able to put them into different stalls in the kennel, and you have to match up the same breed in the same 2 slots for a stall so they don't fight. I don't know why. It's a little weird, but it's okay. Then you got to be able to feed your kennels because you're managing your food.
Dogs are racist, dude.
Yeah.
Dogs are racist. You have to keep their same kind. Or
I was hoping you were going to say, because you were about to, you're like, you drive out to the country. I was like, oh, so it's called Dogs. It's a game about farming.
It's a game about farming. It has a tractor in it. It does have a tractor in it, so... There is that. Anyway, it's just there's a lot to manage. The only thing I noticed toward the end is like the last 2 rounds, I kind of had diminishing returns. I wasn't able to go out and drive around the city because I knew I wasn't going to be able to feed my kennels. I had painted myself a little bit into a corner, but I feel like there are more breeds to work with, more players in the game. There's more people obviously doing different things and taking more dogs throughout the different turns. So I definitely want to play it again. It's a decent production. I mean, good production, rather. It's not decent. It's a good production. But, you know, it was like, you know, when I backed it, I was like, I did it on a whim. I was like, this thing's obviously not going to knock me over, but hopefully it's a cool little Euro about rescuing dogs that I like, and that's pretty much what I got. So let's move on. A couple little news hits before we move into the meat of the podcast. I don't know if you all saw this, but after Unplugged, Anthony Ricano of the Cardboard Jungle, we've talked about Anthony several times, friend of the podcast and one of our friends, but Anthony actually volunteered at the Portal Games booth for PAX Unplugged. Well, after PAX Unplugged, and after he volunteered at the Portable Games booth, he released on the Cardboard Jungle Twitter feed, it's a statement announcing that he is going to start Hexagram 63 Game Studios and start to ask for submissions with a title to be released in 2018. So he basically said, do you have a Euro game that plays in 60-plus minutes? But anyway, did you see that? What do you think of this?
He talked to me briefly about this at PAX, actually.
Cool.
Saying that, you know, he was going to go into it and that he was looking for Euros is like, that's what he wants. He wants the two-hour-plus Euros to publish and stuff. And I was like, dude, that's awesome. He's like, so you run Unpub. Do you happen to know any? And so I shot out a couple titles. And but I was like, that's... It's kind of cool because typically you don't hear many publishers going after that much anymore, and I kind of like about that entry. So I was like, yeah, do it, hit it up, man. That's what I want to see.
That's kind of why I put that little comment in there that there might be a niche in the market, especially with an American publisher doing you know ones that last 60 to 120 to 240 or whatever minutes for Euros.
Yeah, I'm just mad that we're announcing this on Twitter. I got the inside information at PAX Unplugged, not from him, but from other people. So now I'm just sad that I don't have this inside information, and I'm the only one that would be submitting. So you know, not that everybody else could.
So what you're saying is Anthony should have come directly to you and said
he knows.
He knows.
You know, I design games. I don't know why he didn't just come to me immediately.
Oh, he should have. He should have just said, TC, what do you have in the 60 to 580 minute category? And then you could have just handed him a Streech. And you're like,
yeah,
we're done.
Like, here's this. Oh, I got this other one, too, that I made yesterday. you know, all I can say is that, you know, if Anthony doesn't want to work with me, then I don't want to work with him.
Wow,
saying that right now, you know, but I could be convinced.
You could be convinced.
He does, have a nice New York accent, so I mean, that does appeal to me a little bit.
He's got it going on. Yeah, he can definitely use that New York accent to his advantage. So we're just saying, good luck, Anthony. I think that it is definitely ambitious, trying to publish Euros in this vein, but I do think there is a niche, especially for an American publisher, to be able to do this. And everyone out there right now, go to CBJ Podcast, at CBJ Podcast on Twitter, and just say hello, join their Twitter feed, and if you have any game submissions you want to offer to them in the Euro category that are 60-plus minutes, please get in contact with them. Actually, they had a follow-up Twitter post that said that there have been a ton of submissions for it, so that's awesome. So I'm glad to see that kind of interest for them, because we love to play those types of games, obviously. Next on the agenda, this is something that TC actually texted to both of us, and I was like, holy cow, what just happened? But Coaster Park, which we talked about, was it on the last podcast or the one about going to Essen, probably two podcasts ago, at least. But we were all excited, or at least I was, because it was like Coaster Park, and TC experienced the loop, which he was told to summarily put back in the box by Nathan at Pandasaurus. And there might be a reason for that, to be honest with you.
Apparently, from the comments, there is a reason for that.
Yes,
but yeah.
Apparently the comments, and the point we're getting into is that right now, with 58 comments on BoardGameGeek, it is rated at 4.3, which we probably don't need to tell many of you, but that's really, really low. And here's one negative comment that was kind of from the ratings portion of it. It says, extremely disappointed with this. The roller coasters barely work. The marble constantly falls off the side, even when letting it fall under its own weight, and with only a very simple drop into ramp arrangement. The game itself is one of the worst designs I've seen from an established designer or publisher. You simply draw a card and place that part up for auction. That's it. There are some gold cards, but they add nothing to the game and are very low effort in their design. This game is a gimmick, make no mistake. Also, obligatory, loop doesn't work, couldn't work out how to build it comment, which there are a lot of those in the actual comment fields. Now, a positive comment to counter that was that they said, an entertaining light filler game. Most people complaining about coasters aren't putting them together right, looking at the pics posted, and they don't understand physics. Now, that's an interesting comment to make, especially...
Well, that's true. I'm pretty sure most people don't understand physics.
Right. So and I'm like, eh, I don't know whether really that, you know, enhances your argument or not from a, from a positive standpoint. That I believe that comment was like a 7.1 or something like that. But anyway, most of the... I mean, not most of it, but quite a few of the comments was on the negative side, plus being... you know, ranging from 3 to 1 ratings on BoardGameGeek, which you really gotta, I mean, you really gotta try to get, I mean, I guess you don't have to try to get a few of those, but to get a lot of them, yeah, you gotta try. So, I don't know. This is heartbreaking. And I don't know whether it's a pile
on. Did you get this whenever you were, did you order a copy already?
I didn't. No, not personally. I was going to wait until it came.
I thought it was like Gen Con. Everybody was like talking about this one.
Oh, no, I was excited about it. But again, it was like, you know, I mean, Daryl was going, and there's only so many things I was going to ask him to bring back. And they did an Essen release, but I didn't pre-order it because I was going to wait and just see. I was very excited about it. But I figured by the time, you know, like mid-December rolled around, I'd be able to get a copy. You know, order it from somebody or get it from somebody that's wanting to trade. I think it'd probably be pretty easy to get few in trade now, to be honest with you. I don't know what to make of this. I still want to try it, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. You put it on here. I sent it to you guys because you guys were like super excited about it, and I was like, and I'm just like confused too, because like I guess basically like if you have the thing and it's like not necessarily working, like you could just like I don't know. There's a lot of options outside of just releasing it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened either.
I'm disappointed because I just want things like this to like work out, because this is such a good toy factor and it could be such a good like entry point for the hobby for like people.
The thing that kind of baffles me though is that Nathan is not. I mean, he's pretty. You know, he's pretty good about knowing when to find something good and then making it better. And like Wasteland Express delivery service was great. And realizing what Matt and Ben were putting together and adding even more in the production quality of it. Now I could see like the actual play of Coaster Park not being terribly deep, and that's okay because it's mostly just trying to get you into the game itself. But I saw another comment that said the fun part of the game is trying to build your coaster, but the rest of the game's getting in the way of that. Like just the rules prevent it, the rest of the game prevents it, and yeah, I mean, to be honest, this kind of has a little bit of Mousetrap syndrome. I don't know if y'all remember trying to play Mousetrap, but as a kid, you were sitting there going like, why am I following these rules? I just want to build a mousetrap, you know, and you just want to set it off.
Great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And that's what some of the things, and I have to watch it, but it looks like Vassal has a video review. So
yeah, I have not watched that yet, so I'll have to check that out. Anyway, I just want to bring attention to it. I don't want to, I'm not negatively trying to say don't get Coaster Park. I'm just saying something like this is a red flag, not only for just saying is this piling on from people who either demoed it at Essen or isn't putting it together right. So it's one that I even more now so want to try out for myself. I don't think I want to shell out $60 for it to try it out, but I would like to at least try the game out and give it a fair shake and see if, you know, some of these comments hold water. All right, well, let's move on to the meat of the podcast. Well, as many of you no doubt noticed from your social media feeds, there's a new board game convention in the mix. And for what we experienced, and the numbers we'll share in a bit, it's a hit. However, it wasn't all unicorns and rainbows at PAX Unplugged. There was an undercurrent of mixed reviews from the many publishers that attended. What's the truth? Who's to say? And where's the fun? Hey, let's talk. TC's already getting cracked up.
No, that was a good intro.
I'm doing my morning zoo impression. How's that?
Yeah,
that
right? Yeah. Wow, wow.
Yeah, I need some sound effects like a ooga. Yeah. How's that? Anyway, to join us for this special section, we not only have Daryl and TC, we have a special guest, which is Leslie Louder. Say hello.
Hey, everybody.
Excuse me. Just hello. Like the Reading versus Reading Railroads, it's Leslie Louder, not Leslie Louder. So.
Oh, thanks.
All right, so we've got Leslie on the podcast right now because we want to get a first-time Congor's perspective for this because, you know, TC and Daryl and I have attended many conventions. She has, of course, attended UMPUB. This is the first kind of big convention in, able to go both with Daryl and Ethan to experience all the things. So as we walk through and talk about PAX, we'll get her perspective of the convention as well. But first off, before we get to the numbers, how did the convention feel to you all? We want to get first impressions. We can talk about our most memorable moments and more details in a bit. But how did you feel that the convention went? Leslie, let's start with you.
I had heard how big PAX East was from Daryl, and I had attended UNPUB, I don't know, it's probably 12 years ago, maybe longer. I'm older. 20. No, 15. I don't know. But the main focus of Origins at that point. Oh, yeah. God, I'm not talking. I already messed up. Yeah. See?
It's all right.
2 seconds. I'm on a podcast. But anyway, so I attended Origins years ago, and it was really magic-based. So I remember walking into the venue, into the main hall, and being kind of overwhelmed by how big that was. But also Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer was there. So, I mean, that was like the key point for me at that convention. Mm-hmm. But for this one, it was, I think that how I felt when I walked into the hall was kind of summed up by our son's Ethan's face, because he had come to help at UMPUB this year. And we told him that it was in a convention center. And I don't think that he had pictured how big the event was. So, I had been there previously for a advanced placement conference at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, and we ate in that hall, and I walked in and it was transformed, and Ethan's mouth kind of dropped open. He was just agape as he's looking around at everything, and I kind of felt the same level of being overwhelmed and excited at the same time. Like, it was a noise like no other that I had heard, in a good way. Mm-hmm. Lots of chatting, lots of talking. It's impressive.
All right. So, Daryl, let me get your impressions. What did you think? The first venue that we've ever been to as far as a big con in Philly, obviously, yes. I think that we've all been to Philly before.
Yeah.
What did you think of PAX Unplugged, just in general, first impressions?
I really liked it. It was small. I thought it was very well organized. One of the big things, I know this is such a cheesy thing to kind of mention or geek out about, was how spaced out all the aisles were for the vendor booths. Like, you didn't feel at any point that you were right on top of somebody else, or, you know, people were looking at their phones and you're stuck behind them for 10 to 15 minutes like you are at Gen Con. Like, you actually had a way to get around. I saw people in wheelchairs. I saw strollers. I saw the absolutely hated thing in the world, roller bags at a convention. I wasn't tripping over anything. Like, everyone, like, those that were in a wheelchair looked like they had no problem getting around. I mean, it was just that was the one thing I was like, wow, that's pretty nice. And I loved the massive open gaming. Way to go bringing it back, you know, because other shows, Origins, took it away. So really happy that a show said, you know what, we're going to embrace it and bring that back.
Yeah, I loved it. The open gaming section was great. And as far as like everything being together in the one hall was awesome, too. The only thing that was a little bit, I don't know, clunky about the process was the fact that, like at Origins, you know, Origins has been divided for a while too. They keep those dividers closed and have very controlled access between the exhibit hall and the open gaming hall. Well, I say open gaming in quotation marks because there's not as much open gaming in Origins anymore. But PAX has the same setup where it has the exhibit hall and it has all the open gaming and a few other demo areas and things. Well, every night at 6 o'clock, they'd have to like have a team of 80 enforcers stand there, making sure nobody comes into the exhibit area, and they just slide those big sliders all the way across the hall, just chung, 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 for about an hour, closing off the exhibit hall. I like the fact that it was completely open during the day because it made sure that people who went to open gaming saw the exhibit hall, and vice versa.
Yep.
But that whole space, I don't know. It happened Friday night when I was playing. Well, I'll talk a bit about later about what I was playing, but it kind of interrupted the game because every time you'd hear like every 3 or 4 minutes, you'd hear cha-chung behind you and people just like, you know, shouting out to each other trying to close these dividers. Anyway, small nitpick. Overall, I liked the space very much. TC, what was your first impression of PAX Unplugged?
I thought it was really sweet. I was kind of going. No real intention of doing anything specific, so I didn't sign up for any panels or anything of those I didn't even watch any of the panels. I saw him like yelling one time on like at, like Thursday night. They just all of a sudden was like throughout the entire hallway. I don't know if you were there for that, but like, I don't know.
Godzilla showed up? What?
Apparently. It was like, yeah, just a roar of the crowd over in the corner. And I'm just like, okay, I have no clue what's going on. And I guess it was just celebrities or something.
When did this take place?
It was like, I think it was Thursday, maybe, or no, it's not Thursday, Friday, I'm sorry.
Friday.
I think it was Friday.
Yeah, that's the drawback for me for Friday. I got in a little bit late to PAX because I had some issues back here at the house, so I get in on about 2 o'clock on Friday, so I was at, okay. I missed well, the whole opening
crowds.
We were
all like, where is Chris?
I was still on the road, working on a little bit of sleep, as usual. I don't know what it is about PAXs, man. PAXs, or at least cons in November. Like, BGGCon's been cursed as far as getting there on time. Now PAX was as well. But I made it, and that's all that's...
Yeah, that's all that matters. And
this show, no excuse. You have so many places that you could crash down the night before on the way to Philly.
Couldn't. So, sorry.
No, you could have. You just didn't.
I mean, I could have if I wasn't wrestling with, you know, the power company until, like, 6 o'clock that night.
That's what phones are for.
All responsibilities.
Yeah, practical.
Oh, adulting.
Stuff.
Adulting. Adulting sucks, especially when it comes to conventions. Well, how about Philly? I mean, we've all been to Philly. Do you feel like this is a great con crowd? Do you think this is a great venue, downtown venue, for a convention this size?
I didn't realize that you could get to everything within, like, a second. Like, I don't really hang out too much in that area of Philly. Like, at any time that they've take me, it's like South Street, which is just a little bit down from there. Mm-hmm. So and like South Philly too. So going down to like wherever the convention center is, which is right by Chinatown, it's like everything in Chinatown is available to you when you walk out the door. And I guess Trocadero is right around the corner. And yeah, I don't know. It's an awesome venue. I didn't expect it to be as awesome as where it was located.
Leslie and I knew we've been to Philly a lot.
Philly's my favorite city.
And she's lying. And
no, it really is. If I could, you know, win the lottery and get one of those pieces of property in historic Philadelphia,
right? Yeah.
You know, that actually has, there's lots of places in Philadelphia that's still green. Mm-hmm. Not every city block is taken up by, you know, massive skyscrapers in Old City.
Yeah.
And of course the venue is, you know, blocks from Old City. A really quick walk to Independence Hall.
Yeah.
But that's the history.
We eyed moving Unpub to Philly a few years back. Mm-hmm. And again, actually, when we were looking to leave the Baltimore Convention Center, we reached back out to Philly. And the main reason why we didn't was the sheer cost of the convention center. That convention center is insanely priced.
Yeah, I kind of had a question. I mean, that's actually answers a lot of questions for me because, I mean, the convention center in Boston is not cheap either. So PAX throws a lot of money into getting these venues. So anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, but most of the board is all in Pennsylvania or right around Philly. So we kind of knew all of the area very well. And I've been there with Philadelphia Wizard World and such like that. So yes, Philly is a perfect place. I am actually surprised we've never had a board game convention there before, and I'm elated that we now have one now. Long time coming, very much needed, and I think it's going to stick around for a while, especially if they can get the dates worked out to where they are not overlapping with BGGCon, and if the errored post that went up and down on their website within a blink of an eye is correct. I know the dates for next year and they don't overlap.
We might as well mention that now. So we were going to talk about toward the end, whether we'll go back and we can revisit that in a second, but let's talk for a second about next year. So that you're right. The rumor on the street is that it's the first weekend of December. So it's the weekend after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And, yes. You're right that those dates kind of flew up, and a lot of people kind of, you know, got the gist of that. But it was listed on the Philly Convention Center, the Pennsylvania Convention Center, for a long time. And then they're not right now, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to happen. But I have spoken to a couple people, and the assumption is that those dates will stand firm and that they will be confirmed and released by PAX probably early next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there shouldn't be any overlap between BGGCon and PAX Unplugged. And for those of you out there who are listening that possibly don't know the story behind PAX and BGGCon, a lot of you will no doubt be veterans and know about BGGCon and things like that. BGGCon always happens the week before Thanksgiving. This year, PAX Unplugged was at the same time. And whereas some of us typically go to BGGCon, we all, since it's on the East Coast, decide to go to PAX Unplugged. As far as Philly, though, for me, I mean, I couldn't wait. I freaking love Philadelphia. Especially where I knew the venue was going to be. Like, every time I go to Philadelphia, I can't wait to go to the market. I can't wait to go to Chinatown. Just that whole area around that, it's right downtown, and the architecture in Philadelphia is great. The walking areas in Philadelphia are great. It's just it's a really nice spot to be in. I hate to say this because I love Boston, but even more so than Boston, because it is right in the heart of Philadelphia. And I love the area around the Boston Convention Center for PAX East, and I love Boston in general. But, you know, I've got to either – and I can walk it. It's not a big deal. But I can walk it, or I need to go to South Station and take the T over, you know, down to South End or to – you know, to the Copley Station and things like that, to visit a lot of the Boston sites. And then from that part, you can walk everywhere. But Philly's different. It's just walkable from right at that spot. Not that the whole reason to go to a convention is not to see the city, but it's nice to be able to see it when you want to take a break from inside from the activities.
Yeah, and it's super good to have a break, because, like, some conventions, like, case in point, whenever the one time I went to BGG Con, the big downside to that is getting out.
Oh yeah, you're stuck.
You're there, and that the food that they have there are just it's there. It's what it is, you know.
Well, it's like what we mentioned too. The only drawback to PressCon, at least PressCon, we all drive to, so at least we can go out and drive to somewhere else. But PressCon, we're stuck there. We got TJ's, which has the worst service in the planet.
It was so good at first.
It was at first. Yeah, but you're right, and that the pro of those types of conventions like BGGCon and PressCon is the fact that once you're there, it's in the hotel, you've got bars there for you, you just don't have to worry about going anywhere, but the fact is you are there. So you're held hostage to what they have there in that hotel. And at BGGCon, it just gets old, and you want to get out, and at least you can escape when you're at PressCon, and BGGCon's tough unless you want to Uber way, you know, in the Dallas or go to Hard Eight or something.
Well, anyway, we have this one more year before, I mean, not to sidetrack to BGGCon, but there's one more year before they're moving as well, so.
Oh, where are they moving to?
I think they're moving to downtown Dallas. They got a big hotel in Dallas, because they're outgrowing where they're at. They have been for years, so.
That's true. Well, and it's good to know that they are outgrowing that, and I hope that the pace continues, because next year we'll see. Well, I guess we'll see what the numbers were this year for BGGCon attendance versus PAX U attendance. And now that they're not overlapping, at least they won't cut into each other. This year was a little bit tough for that. So before we dig into more of it, let's talk about numbers. As we're talking about with attendance, I don't know the BGGCon numbers, but I do know numbers compared to PAX Unplugged.
It's like right 4,000 for BGG.
Was it 4,000, really?
It was like about 4,000, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
And because they sell out, like, immediately, yeah, so they kind of have it controlled, you know?
That's very true, and BGGCon is a very core audience. You know, there's a lot of veteran gamers, a lot of people who are on BGG constantly, Board Game Geek constantly, and so you're right, they sell advanced tickets, they sell out. There's only so much to go into the venue, so I don't think that PAX Unplugged really cut too much into them, but simply because people had already bought tickets. If anything, it probably affected them as far as, you know, exhibitors. But that's not a huge deal to BGGCon. Anyway, so PAX has not released official numbers for attendance, but word on the street has run from around 7.5 thousand unique visitors up to around 23,000. And we were all talking about it at the convention, and we didn't know what to believe, but we can confirm that the 7.5 thousand number seems ludicrously low, considering that PAX released the official numbers for library checkouts. And this was tweeted directly from the PAX tabletop account. They said 8,305 loans at Unplugged, more than double any prior PAX, which is...
But that's all weekend long. And if you consider, like, people checking out two or three titles throughout the weekend, hell, two or three titles a day... I mean, that can rack up pretty quickly.
I mean, true. If you have a dedicated, you know, group of 2,500 people checking out four games a day, sure. I mean,
If you look at, like, half of that room was just all CCG players. So that doesn't even count anybody who's not going to touch a loan.
I know. I was going to follow that up with, but I do agree, 7,500 is way lower than what I think it was, especially Saturday. Saturday was crazy.
People coming in and out of the Unpub room were actually complaining that there weren't seats. There wasn't enough places to be able to sit down and play the games that they had. It was that packed.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see it in the hallways when you walked up and down. People were finding any corner, any chair, any table available to throw a game down and play.
Absolutely. And that's the part where we have some comparisons to Origins. Because, so we know numbers from Origins. And we've all been to Origins at one time or the other, but particularly this past Origins. The attendance at Origins this last year was 17,000. 17,001 officially, but 17,000. And they didn't have, I mean, they had some open gaming, but at PAX Unplugged, they had that huge open gaming area. They had the library, they had these different checkouts, and the crowds at PAX Unplugged felt just as big as Origins, if not bigger.
Yep.
So Joel Eady over at DriveThru Review, he tweeted during the show that he'd heard from somebody toward the end that it was close to around 23,000. Now, my source, that should remain unnamed at PAX, has said that they can't confirm or deny that, but they said Joel was probably pretty close. So
I will say that I've heard a couple months back that tickets were still on sale and it was over 18,000. So yeah, 23 sounds about right, considering, because I know with ticket sales, like with Unpub, more, with the exception of designer tables, more people sign up for tickets within the last 30 days before the show.
Right.
So I would totally buy that.
I would say probably somewhere between 18 to 23,000 people.
Yeah.
So PAX Unplugged in its first year actually did better than Origins, which is impressive. It is in a more densely populated metropolitan area, and also PAX does a, well, let's just go ahead and just pin the tail on the donkey here. PAX does a hell of a lot better job at advertising and marketing than Origins does. So
it's true.
It does.
Man, like getting your badges, everything was streamlined. Everything was nice. There was no massive.
Oh man,
well, except for TC's mailing thing.
No. I'm saying they didn't send certain things out in the mail. But I was just going to say that, like, they didn't send, like, I think it was probably like the last 5 days of registration. They didn't send anybody those things out in the mail. So there's like a bunch of people. They never said anything. I don't know why they didn't apologize, but whatever. Eventually, there was a thing that said, "Just go to Will Call. They'll take care of it."
Right.
And I went to Will Call. And no one, like, there was no line on the very first day. On the second day, I looked just to see, like, what was Saturday like? And one of my people that I knew had to go get theirs from Will Call, so we looked. No line.
Yeah.
Like, at Will Call, zero line. It's insane.
That's amazing.
Goodbye, whatever. But if you looked across the way, people were buying merchandise, and that line was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was so huge. And I was like, because the first day we just walked up and we're like, well, I assume that's the line for Will Call. And I was like, no, this is merchandise. I'm like, where's Will Call? And they're like, over to the area where there's like
no one.
A tumbleweed rolling. all the people are sitting behind the desk like.
I will say that is one thing that all PAXs do far better than any other convention is their merchandise. Their gear is awesome. It's super expensive, but it's well produced and well made.
Did you get your scarf?
I did not get my damn scarf. And I am fucking livid about that.
Those I tried to get a scarf for him for Christmas, and they didn't have any.
Okay,
I didn't pre-order.
Yeah. Every single damn PAX show, you can buy their scarf. It's like the collectible thing. So every time I go to PAX East, I always get the scarves. Because the scarves are really cool looking, and they're really nice, and they're really comfortable. I just really like them. And this one, the colors this year for Unplugged were black and purple. Typically, I'm not a purple-wearing guy, but it looked really awesome. And I was like, I'm getting me a scarf. No, you had to pre-order a three-day badge and add $25 onto that pre-order to get the scarf.
Oh.
They did not sell the scarves at the show. And I was like, well, I'm an exhibitor. I'll pay $25 right now for the damn scarf. Oh, no. Come back Sunday. Oh, okay, cool.
All right.
So Even Sunday morning, I went back. I'm sorry, I'm not done. You put Daryl rant on here. Here's my damn rant. So Sunday, I go back and I come up. I said, "Hey, exhibitor, at the end of the day, can I come up and see if there's any scarves left to purchase a scarf?" Yeah. Come back at the end of the day. We'll see what we can do. Sounds good. No guarantees. I totally understand that. I'm up for the chance. I even bugged Matt Morgan about it. So we got to leave. Leslie goes up and asks. Leslie gets more or less told the same thing. I go inside. I start cleaning up stuff at the Panda booth. I come back. They're breaking down the entire pre-reg area for the scarves. And I'm like, hey, can I? Oh, no. We're packing these up. We're gonna save them for another thing. I'm like, yeah, but can I buy one from you? No. These are for pre-orders. But you're packing them up, so clearly they're not getting them. Yeah, we're going to work out what to do. I'm like, what the hell? Like, they literally had, like, three boxes of unopened scarves, like cases of scarves. I'm like, one, I'm willing to give you money for a fucking scarf.
All right, so I guess the moral of the story is anybody wants to DM me on Twitter, then, you know, I'm trying to get Daryl a scarf for Christmas. So if you want to get rid of yours for, you know, a reasonable price.
All right, so DM Chalkboard Gamer on Twitter. And
it'll make Daryl very happy.
Yes. Okay, so Daryl, I guess we know the answer. So the answer to Daryl, are you coming back next year, is hell no, because of the scarf.
Kerfuffle.
No, that's I'm right. Going to, when I go to sign up, because I want for Panda. I'm the marketing manager for the company. We got a booth. So believe me, money was paid for all of that stuff. So next year when we go to exhibitor, I'm going to be like, and where do I put in money for a fucking scarf?
All right.
Sorry, guys. I started that.
That's all right.
that's good. Daryl is the toxic PAX fan. We understand that.
So let's segue then. Speaking of exhibitors, this is a good part to jump on. So about exhibitors, on Saturday, I had heard from a few people, exhibitor friends and so on and so forth, who got in booths, that there was a general rumbling among the exhibitors that attendance and sales were kind of a mixed bag. And some people just didn't know what to make of it. Because when you show up to PAX, you just didn't know what to expect. I expected PAX to be awesome, but a lot of people just, you know, you just don't know. So myself included, chalked it up to new gamers in attendance. So the PAX polling had found that a huge number of attendees had never attended any con before PAX Unplugged, which is amazing. Anecdotally, I felt like the experienced gamers or con goers all had likely seen or bought many of the games being sold there, and any of the newer gamers or con goers were likely trying to experience everything the con had to offer, playing demos and et cetera before deciding what to buy, which I think by Sunday bore itself out, because some of those frowns had turned upside down. So our friends over at Daily Magic Games, I talked to them in the booth. They said the show was really good for them. Our numbers, our personal numbers for greater than games, like Savvy Games, were great. As a matter of fact, I think the last thing that I talked to Paul about was we did almost twice as much in sales as any other PAX show, and we usually do really well at PAXes. This booth, of course, we had tested layouts both at PAX East and at Gen Con. We kind of had it down to a T. We had exhibits going on, or demos going on, and we also had some new products, so it didn't hurt. But anyway, did you guys hear from any of the exhibitors? And TC, you said that surprises you, but I had heard a little bit something different than you had. But go ahead.
No, I was going through on the very last day, just picking up some final things and like doing stuff, because I actually bought stuff at PAX, which is weird. I don't usually buy stuff, right? But I bought a cool bat, like Daryl was saying. The merch was sweet. Like, I would have bought more stuff, but I'm like frugal, so I just like bought a game bag, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. It's like collapsible. I talked to Capstone Games, mm-hmm. and Capstone Games is the one that they're just like heavy Euro games, you know, medium weight heavy Euro games, and they're like, yeah, this is fantastic, we sold a lot of copies. I'm like, what, really? This, I thought you would be, why would you even be here? Like, there's so many new gamers. And they're like, well, you know, people just walk up, they demo it, and at first their brain explodes, and then they go, oh, I need this.
Well, see, so they also have something that's got that toy fight, they got climbers sitting there. So that draws people in too.
They didn't even have it out though, right? Like at that point. But yeah. Like they were saying they sold that Lignum game, the game about logging.
Oh, see, now
they were
that
like, we sold out of Lignum.
Are
I'm
you
like,
kidding me? That surprises me, actually, because I can't imagine.
The audience loves logging.
I mean, maybe people in Philly love logging. I don't know. But Lignum is not the most attractive game. It's a good game, but it is like, it's not going to like draw a new gamer and go like, oh, wow, look at this game about logging. You know, it's just.
They just go around the circle one time and they're like, oh, logging.
I do think, I mean, it's nice, though. See, the thing is, I really think most of the buying at the con went on Sunday. Because I think people were going around looking at all the cool stuff, trying to take all the the exhibitors in, and they finally went back and said, like, you know, this is awesome. Let's buy stuff. And I think it's a byproduct of the environment that PAX Unplugged created. Because they were able to demo several titles, able to rent things from the library. The booth space had enough clearance from almost everybody, and especially prices for the first year. You could spread out and run demos and show people the games, and it made a huge, huge difference. So let's backtrack for 1 second. I had something on the agenda to talk about that we skipped over for a second. But speaking of the Unpub area, and you guys were in, Panda was in the Unpub area, but you know, Daryl, you're involved with the Unpub naturally. Leslie, you were there quite often and seeing the Unpub area. How did the Unpub area feel to you? Did it feel successful? There are tons of people there playing. I mean, I was there for a bit too, but I'd like to get your feedback about it first.
I didn't get up there until Saturday morning, so I did the majority of my volunteering Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning. And I will say that by the time dinner rolled around, the crowd would thin out and people started to give up tables in lieu of dinner and then to go do other things. But it was amazing because as soon as a table was empty, there was someone there wanting to put their game down and have a chance to play. Sunday morning, there were several tables. Even Saturday evening, by the time we got back from dinner, it was packed in there and people were playing until midnight. All different kinds of games. So I wasn't on the organizing end of this. John Mueller was. So I can't really speak to, you know, how many people we had, how many total designers. We had 30, you know, 30-ish tables in there, especially once Panda left. We had some extra tables. But I will say that it was a revolving door. There was a lot of traffic coming through where we were set. It was pretty great for the first experience of Unpub having kind of a side room at a major con like that.
Was it packed the whole time? I thought it seemed packed, at least. All the tables seemed full.
At least when I was there, Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning it was. I can't really attest to how it was on Friday, but I do know that we had an extreme amount of designers, like I said, showing up. Saying, hey, is there a table? Hey, I see a table that's open back there. Can I sit down? Is this open? And John was having to go back and look and say, yes, this one's available, or go ahead and have a seat. It was a revolving door. It was great.
Yeah, I was in and out there quite a bit, and I even did some testing there on Saturday, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to because I just was kind of, I had some demo, we had our own demo room for Grade of the Game, so I was running some demos for Legends of Sleepy Hollow on Saturday morning, but on Saturday afternoon, I wanted to do some testing and development work on the new build for Homebrewers, and so I popped in and I said, like, hey, how's it going? And everybody was like, oh, we got tons of room now that, you know, and Panda's not here. We got your room. Put it down on the list. Please sit down, sit down and do the table. And the times that I was in and out of the room, with the exception, obviously, of Sunday afternoon, because people were filtering out at that point. But every time I popped into Unpub, it seemed like it was just full of people, and I never had to wait. I mean, I didn't have to wait a second after I was done testing, you know, one game where I'd move into the next one. And it was, I mean, it seemed just as packed as the Unpub convention was, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I will say that when Panda was in there, there was some wasted tables from the old Ad Magic booth and stuff. So Saturday morning, Unpub reorganized those tables once you got confirmation from Ad Magic that they weren't coming in. We started off with 22 tables in the Unpub room. By the time we took, by the time Unpub, I guess,
reorganized,
reconfigured mm-hmm. it after Ad Magic left and Panda left, they had 33 tables in their room. And yeah, I was told that they were just nonstop filled. So yeah,
that's awesome. Did you keep Yep. Any sort of official numbers, or are you just guessing?
We would have John, to get those from John.
I mean, the official numbers is 22 tables up to 33 for table-wise, but John has the official numbers.
Cool.
That means burns candles at both ends, but is super organized about it.
All right, well, you know, let's dig into some personal PAX experiences. We've talked numbers, we've talked crowds. Let's move on to what was your favorite PAX moment? Leslie, I'm going to put you on the spot to go first. What was your favorite PAX Unplugged moment?
Kind of
spending time with your husband.
Oh, spending time with my loving and dedicated, amazing board game designer of a husband. Aww. I kind of already shared, you know, this. I think that I really do have to say again, it was Ethan's face when we walked in. And the endless, he wouldn't stop bouncing. He wouldn't stop. Where are we going? Well, can we play this? Can I sit down and play this? And he just, the enthusiasm for wanting to play every game that he could, even ones that, oh, can I play that? It has dinosaurs. That one takes 2 hours and it's for people who are much older than you, buddy. But,
Evolution.
Yeah, it was Evolution. So, you know, I think that was it. Just kind of experiencing it with him. It was a different way to approach going to a big convention like that. He was dragging me everywhere. So just being able to be a part of it as a fresh set of eyes with a much younger, very energized set of eyes.
Yeah. Daryl, about you, besides spending time with your lovely wife and son.
It is wife related. And it was actually, I think it was the last day before you were going to leave. And you were like, this, I'm trying to figure out how you worded it, but you basically said you never understood all the hats and things I had to do at conventions until you saw it firsthand. Because you were constantly like, where are you at? What's
I couldn't going on? Find him.
And I was always
anywhere.
I was either doing something with Panda or signing games or, you know, doing an interview for Panda or checking on the umpub room or, you know, helping a fan get their baseball card signed for bottom of the ninth. Like, it was, it's just, that's normal convention for me. That's how things go. And so I think when I've told her, like, you know, why didn't you get back to me? Not that she harps me like that, because she doesn't. But she's like, oh, I didn't hear from you for like a couple hours. I'm like, well, I had to do this, this, and this. And I think she just, before this point, just thought I'm kind of inflating some things. But now she saw it, and I was like, you know, vindicated a little bit.
I just get paranoid and worried when I can't get a hold of people for
just
several hours. Like, during the convention time, I know he's fine, but you know, when he goes out, I guess that's more of like a mom thing. I think maybe we need to go to counseling or something.
What?
Maybe? I don't know. She's like, where are you, honey? Not
welcome
like trust
to a new state of games.
Just kind of like, yeah. I'm worried about you. I haven't heard from you in a couple of hours. Because, you know, you're good about texting. But yes, I completely understood it because I was there to volunteer for UMPUB. That was my main goal for coming. And so, I don't know. I just thought that I would see you more, but it was. I bumped into Chris at one point when I was looking for him, and I said, hey, I see you. Do you know where Daryl is? And you're like, oh, I think he might be over here in the booth getting. Nope, that's not where he was. He was somewhere else. So
that's what it's like for all three of us with Chris, right. TC, and I. Like, it's always, oh, have you seen Chris, or have you seen TC?
Yeah, you hear tales of like, oh, he was just here, and then you just missed him. And I mean, people talk about that all the time. I'll go to the booth. You know, I run back and forth from demo room to booth to unpub room. I mean, this is the way it's at every convention. But, you know, I'll go back to the booth, and the booth people run behind the booth, or you know, Matthew or Craig or somebody, they'll be like, oh, there was just like four or five people looking for you like in a row. And I'm just like, oh, of course they were. You know, it's just, that's the way conventions are for us. TC, now I know you're going to tell us your personal PAX experience, but yours was interesting this time around because you were, you know, hosting, basically. It was your friend Mario, right?
Yeah. Well, it's technically Mario.
Mario,
it's,
excuse me, yes.
So just think of Super Mario and then do the opposite of what your brain wants to say.
Right.
Anyway, so, yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't like, it was semi-chauffeuring at certain points, but I also had my friend Tim there, too. And so, depending on the situation, we could hand Mario off to people, but like, also, I mean, he's not like he could do things. It's just like,
yeah, it wasn't like he had to be. Not saying like you had to bodyguard him the entire time.
No, yeah, it's just I would feel bad if I wasn't like you know, like, at least, hey, you have something to do right now. Right. Because otherwise, just like someone's just randomly walking around and they don't really have a plan. For me, I don't have a plan going into any of these things. So it's just kind of following people. And I think he got to see a lot of that, right? Like, I think with Mario, when I would walk around with him, he was always like, I don't think it's annoyed. More like that kind of feeling that you get when you're just like, this is weird. When I just keep hugging random people and talking to people, and it's like trying to get from one end of the hallway to the other.
Absolutely.
And it's taken me 15 minutes, and he's like just standing there, and I'm like, oh, here's my friend Mario. Oh, here's my friend Mario. Oh, here's my friend Mario. You know, and it's just like, he might never, ever see these people ever again. But we're just trying to get to a table so that we can play games. And I guess that's it. But I think that comes with anybody that goes to a lot of conventions too. It's just, you don't have to be as famous as us, but
it's funny though, but it's true, because it happened. Lillian experienced it the first time at UmPub. The first time she'd ever seen me around in like a huge group of people. I barely got in the door at UmPub, and you have to say, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, this is Lillian. Oh, this is Lillian. And then she went to Gen Con this year, which is even crazier. And I told her, I was just like, just forget about it. At Gen Con, like, when we're together, possibly, you know, just, there's going to be thousands of people there, and I'm going to have to, you know, not get from point A to point B. So, anyway, go ahead.
It's a certain level of celebrity. It really is. And people don't get it. There was my students... I teach high school, so my students sometimes try to find out the most strangest things about their teachers. And somehow one of them, I had said that Daryl was out of town, and they somehow found him on Twitter and didn't understand how he had thousands of followers. Like, why is your husband, I thought this was, what does your husband do? And I explained it again, and I said, but it's more so the board gaming community. And the looks on their faces, they don't understand.
No, just,
Even I run a board game club at school, and they don't understand.
Yeah.
It's board games are Clue and Monopoly and you know, card games and Rummy, and it's not at all what happens when you actually go to a convention. And I see that with all three of you too. Whenever I go anywhere, so I feel important, kind of like a member of the entourage, right?
Yeah, you're not Turtle. You're Johnny. You're Johnny. What's his face?
Drama. Yeah,
Johnny Drama. Johnny Drama.
Yeah, I can take that.
So TC, I didn't mean to interrupt on going on a tangent on this, but you made a good point. But so, what was your favorite PAX moment? Do you have one?
Oh, I don't have a specific one. Let's just go with the idea that for once I got a chance to stay in Philly with a friend, right? So Mario has a nice condominium in this area that's completely, I keep saying, it's like completely gentrified. Like there's this area of Philly now that everyone is spending a gazillion tax dollars on that does not need it at all. So he's got like a walkway that goes over this beautiful piece of the water, right? They're building like this bike trail that just continues through the city, and he's right on the river in this area where they're just putting in all these really, really expensive apartments and condominiums, right? And like the place just looks fantastic, that area. I don't know if you've seen pictures that I did, but like you just walk out his door and you're like, oh, looks great. And totally doesn't need it. Like, they're all so super rich, they could just buy it themselves. What are they doing? Anyway, so I stay in this really, really sweet condominium that overlooks like the city, and that's awesome just to start with. And then every day we went to the convention center in a different way, and we came home in pretty much the same way. We always got a lift home, but every day we went out. So the first day we took a lift there. And that was, pre-marathon day. So we didn't have to worry about people walking around. But, like, during this whole thing, there's a marathon, right? And,
right
to get,
yeah.
And to get to the city from where we are, like, we got to ride something in. So, it was always an extra whatever. So the first day, we didn't have that, so we took a lift in. That was pretty awesome, and I got a chance to see the market, which is awesome again. Now, sadly, Origins, you're failing again. This market's better than the one at Origins.
It is. North it's Market is great, but the ready market.
It's missing Jenny's. It is missing Jenny's.
It is missing Jenny's.
Pump the brakes. It's also missing the Belgian waffle stand.
That's pretty good too.
Yeah. I love that.
But it's Pennsylvania Dutch waffles. Mm. So I
and pretzels.
But I can't get chicken and waffles from it. So
I guess I'm pretty sure you just need to look hard enough. There was
there's a soul food. There's a soul food kitchen in the Raiden Market that'll give you chicken and waffles. So
it's like three times as big though. It's so ridiculous. Anyway, so that was awesome, and just getting that and getting my coffee every single day. And then the second day, we took the, the trolley, not the subway. Right. We took the trolley, so we had to walk down. It was really nice, just walking and then going to this thing. And it had a sign up on the side that said, "It's rude, dude, to stop manspreading." Right, and I was like, this is awesome. I've never seen this before. And so it just said, "It's rude, dude," and that's supposed to mean don't spread your legs,
don't man spread, right? Yeah,
don't man spread, which is hilarious.
Wow, I've never heard that term before.
Really?
Awesome. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we got there that way, and then the final day we walked there, and we walked the whole way, and it's not, I mean, I think what it's like 16 blocks, something like that, which isn't ridiculous. I mean, in city terms, it's not the but it's like right through the best parts of Philly. Like, there's a park right along the way, all these historic buildings, Jefferson stuff, and everything in the musical Hamilton. all the people in the musical Hamilton as you're walking down, not the actual things. But and just every morning, just going to a new like restaurant or something. I went to like the Metropolitan Bakery and got something, and then took pictures of this. They had my friend Mario has a lactose intolerance, so he's just experimenting with different types of nut milks.
Cashew almond blend is our personal favorite.
Yes, even our children like it.
The problem with the almond milk, right, is it doesn't foam very well, right? It just he has little foamy things. He can't get the foam in his coffee, so he doesn't like that. So we went to a place that was just like the most vegan hipster place, exposed piping, just people all, nobody had a smile on their face that was serving. And like everybody was on a laptop, and they looked like they'd been there for the last 3 weeks. And I didn't see a man bun. So that's interesting. That's gone.
No man jumpsuits
either. But yeah, super hipster, and he gets his oat milk coffee.
Oat
cappuccino.
Milk.
Mm. Yeah.
All right.
It's the new thing. So oat milk is the new thing. Anyway, just awesome. I like that environment. Right. I thought it was so cool, and I don't get to see that ever. So yeah, I love walking through the city. It is as much as it is Philly, and people who haven't been to Philly, they might just be like, "Oh, it's just another city." Well, it's sweet. It's a sweet city. I don't know. I like it a lot. So that's my favorite.
I 100% agree. I love Philly. I love when I'm there. I wish that I'd had more time. Matter of fact, if I'd been able to not have to adult on Thursday, I would have gotten there early and would have just done everything I love to do in Philly. Walking around the historic areas, going to the waterfront, going and eating at Morimoto. Oh, it was so good. Anyway.
I went to the Italian market the last time I was there, which was like 2 weeks before then. And I didn't get to go this time, and I was so sad because the Italian market's awesome.
There's so many good things in Philly. Anyway.
We're pretty lame, though, considering we all live, besides Chris, within an hour and a half of Philadelphia. And we're, it's so amazing, and we never go there.
It's like it's like drinking before you're 21. And then as soon as you're 21, like, you can go drink anytime. Like, we can drive to Philly anytime. Which is we could. Right there.
Wall. But it's like a wall, though. Like, I don't want to drive within 30 minutes of it because it becomes 3 hours to get anywhere. It's like,
yeah,
you can drive anywhere around Philly, but once you get to Philly, it's like, oh god.
Yeah, it's totally true. I mean, like I tweeted, Philly's traffic is a special kind of hell, and I've driven in some bad cities. Boston is horrible, but Philly, it took me an hour. I missed the valet parking for the Aloft Hotel, and it took me 45 minutes to go around the block.
Yep.
Yeah, it was that bad. Okay, so let me jump into positive stuff. So my favorite PAX experience, other than the fact that just taking in the city, I think like TC said, I love the city, and I love the city life. I miss it. But my favorite PAX moment was, I talked to Matt Morgan about 2 or 3 months before PAX Unplugged was going on. And usually at PAX, I'd try to do something at PAX, you know, whether it's a panel or something like that. And I asked Matt kind of what if they needed me for anything. So there was these sessions they were doing with, you know, like Mandy Hutchison and Rodney Smith would watch a play and things like that. And it's called a learn and play. And basically it's different themed things where they have like 10 different tables of people who sign up and they come in and you teach them a couple of games and different learning plays do different things. But mine was about family friendly strategy and Laser Riders fit into that really well. And it was nice to be able to just teach Laser Riders for greater than games. But we also did King Domino. But anyway, so I had basically a 3-hour slot to teach Laser Riders to 10 tables worth of groups of people of different, you know, gaming backgrounds and so on and so forth, and King Domino. So we start with Laser Riders, and I'm showing them up on this big projector, and everybody's kind of having a cool time, but lots of questions. So I'm rotating from table to table to table and seeing, you know, different people having just different experiences. They're all having a blast, and I thought this was really, it was indicative. The crowd seemed indicative because they were just feeding off each other, too, because they were laughing, they're cutting up, and then the only drawback to it was that because Laser Riders, of course, is variable length, some groups were finishing out before others, so I had to, instead of teaching everybody at once, I had to go from table to table to table to keep teaching King Domino. That's okay, because King Domino is super easy to teach. And so my favorite PAX moment, this is what happens within this group. I go to teach this one group King Domino. It's like the third table I'm about to teach. And I say, okay, well, pick your colors. And then kind of explaining the tiles, and I'm going to do variable setup. So I say, okay, everyone hand me your meeples. And two of the three people at the table hand me their little kings. And the third person looks at me and goes, what's a meeple? And that just made my head explode a little bit, because that was indicative of what PAX Unplugged was about. Like, there were so many new not only new congoers, but actually gamers that are not part of this insular bubble that we're stuck in sometimes. Where we'll talk, I mean, we get feedback on the pod. We have a lot of veteran listeners, but we get new listeners from time to time. We get feedback on, like, you might say something that doesn't make sense. But the fact that somebody wouldn't know what a meeple is actually takes you way back to when you didn't know what a meeple was. And it was a long, long time ago for a lot of us. But there's still people that game, or are fairly new to gaming, they might hear the term meeple and not know what it is. So that was my favorite PAX moment, was to just experience somebody finding out something real. And the people around the table were like, oh, it's like, they were actually trying to explain this. Oh, it's it means like, I think a mini people or something. Or something like that. And I think it was from these other, and the person goes, oh, I think I heard of that one time. I was watching a game of something and they said that it was like, I think it was a meeple. And I said, were you Carcassonne? And they went, yeah, that's it. And I was like, you know, so we talked a bit about a minute about the history of the meeple and where it came from, Carcassonne, and what it means to games now. And it was just an amazing experience. So that was my favorite PAX moment.
And that learn and play thing was awesome, by the way. That was a really good idea for PAX. I don't know of any other, like, there was some chatter on the Twitter about, from people, I think they were just a little bit like miffed. I get it. You went to BGG Con, you're like, but other people went to PAX, and I wanna bring it down a little bit because BGG is my home. You know, it's like I'm representing BGG Con, right? But I think everybody, I love BGG Con. I love this thing. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that doesn't happen at like BGG Con, which is probably good for that convention, is you don't get this kind of experience, right? You won't be teaching someone who doesn't know what a meeple is, because they would have already had to reserve their badge way in advance.
Right.
That'd be weird.
So I thought, go ahead.
Two quick things.
Okay.
One was I ran into Rodney Smith on Saturday and ran up to talk to him, and poor guy looked exhausted, like he hadn't slept at all. And he just got done doing, I think he said, 10 sessions with the Learn to Play room. And I've been hearing chatter from people that it's weird because, like, no one knew who Rodney was, that he was doing these.
Yeah.
And everyone's like,
I can imagine.
Oh, you should do like a YouTube show. You talk so well. I had to like go up and be like, so is that true? And he's like, yeah, that was kind of surreal, but also kind of nice. I was like, oh, I bet.
It is. I mean, I can imagine that happening. I guarantee you probably maybe one person in that room knew who I was, but that was fine. I mean,
yeah.
But a lot of people ask me, and they're like, hey, what, do you have Twitter? You know, so, and I've actually seen a couple people follow me, and I love that, because it's like, this is the whole point of what we do, is game evangelism, going out there, teaching the games, getting people playing. And several people just mentioned to me, like, we had a good time with Laser Riders, we had a good time at King Domino, where can I buy both? And I'd say, yes, in the exhibit hall, so on and so forth, blah, blah, blah. It was awesome. So
another quick one that it was one of my favorites, and I can't believe I forgot about it, was there was this girl named Dorian that got Leslie at the Unpub Room, and Leslie texted me, I need you at the Unpub Room. So
you have to understand how she came in. She came in looking for Mike Mullins, and it took me aback, because it was obvious that she didn't know him, but it was kind of not a creepy way, but she was like clutching her bag, and she said, excuse me, is Mike Mullins here? And I said, no,
I know what you're talking
somewhere
about.
And are you supposed to meet him? And she goes, oh, I was trying to find him. And I said, well, what do you need him for? I can probably find out where he is. So she had her entire set of cards from bottom of the ninth categorized by team with a list in this binder. And she pulls it out, and it's beautifully organized. And I don't know, I can let Daryl tell the story, but as soon as I found out why she had it, I'll let him say it. You want me to say it?
Go ahead.
Her dad's a baseball card collector and is suffering from dementia. And one of the things that he still loves is to get baseball cards signed. So she had flown in from
Minnesota.
Yeah. She had flown in from somewhere, and her main purpose was to find as many people as she could who are featured in the bottom of the ninth cards to get them signed. So I said, oh my gosh. And immediately, you know, texted Mike, and then Daryl came in. And as soon as that happened, we just start pulling the cards, and we're like, we know this person is, and we're texting, we're finding it. That's the only time I saw UTC was when you came in to sign your card the whole convention. But I don't know, it was a moving moment. I forgot about that. That might have been my favorite moment too.
And I almost forgot about that too. But when you started mentioning that is again a great PAX Unplugged moment. But not only that, it has fully convinced me that we're not going to stop putting real people in these games.
Oh yeah, no,
it's, because we took
that's
a break.
A magic thing when you tell people, oh no, that's a real person, really? And they want to get the cards lined. And it's also cool, like when you go up to somebody like Eric Handler, and like somebody that typically no one would know who Eric is, and you know Eric's like, oh hey,
that's
no, I don't.
Hey, Eric. Oh,
who is Eric Handler? Hashtag who is Eric Handler?
But I mean, like, okay, it's not uncommon for TC or I to be playing a game and someone come up saying, hey, can you sign this box for me? Sure, no problem. I mean, the same with for Chris. But if you don't have a game designed at all, and someone comes up and hands you a Sharpie and your card from a game that you're in, like, oh, hey, can you sign this? Like, there's something really cool about that. And it's just like, you had it. It was actually the first time you autographed a card for people you didn't know.
Well, and Ethan, I mean, we pulled Ethan over, fought back because Ethan had a card, and he's just signing it. And he like blows on the card.
Yeah,
and like,
that's a pro.
Wow, buddy.
Yeah, but see, that's the point, though, is that, we took a small break from it because we caught some flack from a few industry insiders. And because they said, well, it takes them out of the game. And you know what? I don't care. I don't care anymore. The fact that people can actually it's a gateway to interact with the people who make the games. And if we can bring people into the games and say, like, okay, especially something in Bob and the Ninth, you know, that moment just proved that it's completely worth it, even for just one moment like that. But we've had many moments like that.
Every show we have moments like that.
Absolutely.
But that one was incredibly touching, and that one, out of all of them, that's my favorite autograph moment. I mean, everything about that was good. Everything about that was great. She was amazing about how handling it and like following Mike and I around. We're like, oh wait, we know where TC is. And we ran into Open Gaming and we're like hunting around. She's like super patient and super cool. And she, it was very cool. So yes, but I agree. Like things like Bottom of the Ninth, where it has the collectible appeal, even though it's not a collectible game, to get that autograph on top of it just adds a uniqueness to it.
Yeah, it's like, why not? And most of the people who play the game don't know us from Adam anyway. They're just going to assume they're just made-up people. So it doesn't really matter. Yep. All right, so we're just going to... I asked this question only because every now and then you have a little hiccup. I said, what was your worst PAX moment? I know we're all going to laugh. We're going to say something silly. So it's not going to be like, oh my God, we got knifed in the parkway. You know, it's like, Leslie, what was your worst moment? Or Daryl, you're going first, okay?
No damn scarf.
That's an easy one. Okay. We already got that out of the way for Daryl.
Toxic packs, viewers. Right. Toxic packs.
That's right. All right. Leslie, do you have a worst moment?
I don't really have a complaint about or a worst moment about the con itself. I think that being it was the first one, I wish I had been there longer and plan on using one of my three personal days next year to actually be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Right.
Because there were parts of the actual exhibit hall that I didn't get to see at all. So I would say otherwise, the most frustrating moment was when we first got there and I looked down at our son and said, "Where is your book bag?" And we realized we left the book bag in the Uber, and then we had to call the Uber and meet up with the gentleman. And we were standing outside for quite some time, but that had nothing to do with the convention itself.
Tell them what was in the book bag.
You know, the Switch was in the book bag, and you know, the expansion to Fate of the Elder Gods was in the book bag. But the worst thing that was in the book bag that Ethan was really upset about was his school library book, because he was going to have to answer to his school librarian, Miss Baumgartner.
Yeah. We're just
gonna... So no one wants to answer to Miss Baumgartner. No, no.
She's as bad as her name.
No. Let's be nice. But she, yeah, that was the most frustrating moment. But I can't really sit here and criticize not knowing, seeing everything or getting around or getting confused by a map or doing, because I didn't have time to process it all and to be able to really get in there. There was games that I wanted to play and to get a chance to, but I will next year because we'll be there.
TC, what about you?
I think aside from not getting too much sleep, like I was trying to get back into my normal, like into a reasonable schedule, and kind of failed. So I was getting like 4 hours of sleep every night, and it just was not really good. So I was a little testy in the mornings, but I'll say I didn't really have anything that was like super bad. So how about the worst game I played?
Sure.
Which was definitely by far Brutal Kingdoms. Kingdom or Kingdoms. I don't know.
Yeah.
I will never play this game again, but basically so it had all the weird things. Like it's by Cosmos. It's one of those like little games, like not a two player game, but like a little, it's a micro game.
Right.
And it's by the guy that did Pillars of the Earth and all those other games, you know? So it's like a guy, you know? It's like a designer that knows what he's doing. But apparently they didn't play this game before making it. Like, it was terrible. It's got this awesome art of animals fighting each other and, like, regal, and, like, the queen was, like, a leopard, you know, whatever. But, like, and then you play this game and... Oh my, I literally, like, you could have just, why not just, we could all just roll a die and see who got the highest. It just was just chaos. and then the end scoring made no sense. And yeah, anyway, but I didn't even have a bad time playing it. It was so bad that we were having a good time playing it. Because it was just so, like, in the game you can kill other people. Like, it says this card kills this card if it's in play, right? And so all you would sit there and do is just wait for that one perfect moment where you just get to go, ha! It's good! And then, and it was so bad because it was like, you could flip, somebody's turn went from, hey, you have, like, 12 points, to zero. Immediately.
And you're
like,
that sounds great.
Yes! Yeah. And I would just stand up and...
So it's Bunchkin the Euro, more or less.
The micro Euro.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't even Euro-y. It was real bad.
Was it at least mercifully short?
It was trying to be. It was way longer than it should have been. It was like four rounds. I'm like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this four times to ourselves? Can we just have it over now?
Yeah.
So no, that was I don't understand. Yeah, it really felt like someone. It felt like someone designed it on a weekend and just never play tested it, and they were just like, it's good enough, whatever.
That's horrible.
It's weird, just weird.
All right,
I still had a good time playing it.
Well, we're gonna get back to what we played that was awesome in a second, but I'll wrap up by saying my worst Philly moment, my worst PAX Unplugged moment, was silly enough waking up on Sunday and realizing that I wasn't gonna be able to go and get my favorite lunch from the Reading Market because the Amish don't work on Sundays. I was like,
bum, bum, bum.
I know.
Yeah.
And I also had told several people, like, you need to go and get hit this and this, and they were all Amish establishments in the Reading Market, and everybody was like, no, couldn't get it. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. But anyway, it's really the destination kind of eats for me. But no, I didn't. Other than that, there was not really any negatives for PAX Unplugged. not that I know of, other than a little nitpick I talked about with that whole, you know, sliding, closing off thing at 6 o'clock and whatever. But, you know, that's just to be expected.
But you know what? Next time, go to lunch at, or go to dinner at 6 o'clock.
Go to dinner at 6. Come back at 7. Totally, totally perfect. Works for me. So, what did you play there that was awesome? Anything in particular that you want to mention? If you didn't play anything that was super awesome, although Leslie, I know you played something super awesome.
Would that be a Happy Salmon?
A Happy Salmon, yes.
A Happy Salmon, yes. I mean, I think that anyone who walked the very front of the exhibit hall knows what Happy Salmon is, because they were incredible at saying takes 2 minutes, 2 minute game, 2 minute, and it really did. And I can't remember one person out of the three rounds that I went undefeated that actually left there upset about the game.
That was a nice sneak in there, by the way. Nice humble brag. Yeah.
That was pro.
There was actually a mother and her daughter that played, and all of a sudden here comes Matt Morgan up, and I didn't even realize he didn't have his pack shirt on. It was draped over his shoulder. So he was just there with his wife and kid, and it was Ethan and myself, and I can't remember who was demoing him at that point. But yeah, it was a fun game. We brought it home. We played it with my sister and brother-in-law, and they went ahead and ordered a copy for people for Christmas. We've ordered copies for people for Christmas. It's just one of those incredible, short, fun, party kind of games, run around, kind of crazy.
I would never have tried that game, not from lack of interest, but just packaging and everything just doesn't look like it would be something that I would personally be after if it wasn't for Ethan pulling me, like, Daddy, you got to play this. Daddy, come on, we're going to play Happy Salmon. Daddy, stick your arm out. This is a Happy Salmon. That's a Happy Salmon, Daddy. Isn't that cool? We got to go play Happy Salmon. I'm like, okay, let's go play. And so whenever I played it, and Leslie was smiling ear to ear about it, and she was like, so we're going to buy this. And I went, cool, buy a game. Awesome. And then he's like, oh, you can buy the expansion. I'm like, buy the expansion. And she's like, we don't have 7 to 12 people yet. Let's just buy the base game now.
I regret it now. I wish I had, actually. But just like on a notable side, I don't really ever get to play games at Unpub because I'm always too busy, running, helping to run it. But I did get to try Abandon All Artichokes by Emma Larkins. She had flown in. It's a really fun card game. She was so accommodating because she had it slated for 8 years old enough, and our son's 7. And the strategy aspect of it, I wish I could have played it again with people who were of the same age so I could strategize a little bit more. But it's just kind of dealing with vegetables and picking up cards. It's a deck building game. It goes by really fast, but Ethan caught on to broccoli and how you could kind of throw down broccoli to take people out. And so he just kept hoarding broccoli, and it was fun. I'm excited to see how it develops and where it'll go. It's a great game for, you know, families and kids. So I would like to say on a side note, you know, at least I was able to play an unpublished game because that's, you know, always one of my goals. And I'm sorry. And Battleship, we introduced Ethan to Battleship. they had a right across the hall from Unpub. They had the classic cardboard section. And Ethan was looking around trying to figure out what to play. And I said Battleship, and he kept calling it Warship. And he loved it. He loved it, and was really upset when he went in Saturday morning, Sunday morning to play it, and they were having a Battleship tournament. There's no games.
Okay. This is amazing, by the way.
We actually bought it. We bought it for him for Christmas.
Oh, see, that's awesome.
He doesn't even know we had already bought it.
See, that's amazing, though, too. PAX Unplugged had a Battleship tournament. Could you imagine BGGCon having a Battleship tournament?
They had a Yahtzee tournament.
It's crazy.
It was epic.
They had Yahtzee, awesome. They had Life, they had Monopoly, they had
it was epic.
All the classic titles they had a tournament for.
I mean, that's these cool. Some of the titles in the library, did either of you go there?
Yeah, I went into it. Yeah.
You went into it? Yeah. So the titles in the library look like they had come out of my grandmother's basement. Yep. They were fantastic. Didn't matter that the boxes were falling apart. That nostalgia brought so many people into that room that it was always packed. It was really hard to find a group of 3 to 4 seats together. And once you did, you stayed there and just played until you were ready to leave. Mm-hmm. So it was a really nice, a nice room to have.
Yep.
It was a fantastic idea.
Yep. How about you, Daryl? Anything super memorable? You got a chance to play? Did you get a chance to play anything?
I didn't get to play much, unfortunately. That's always the takeaway when working the shows. Try to find time. The one game that immediately jumps to mind, besides Happy Salmon, was I met Jerry King for the first time. And I, you know, talked with him, or, you know, seen him talking on Twitter and Facebook before.
And explained to everybody who Jerry is.
Jerry is an aspiring game designer.
Okay. Jerry King. Well, I mean,
it's Gerald King online, but it's Jerry.
Right.
So anyway, he has a bunch of kids. I think he said he's got 5 or 6 kids. And so he pretty much focuses on trying to make kid games, or his games all kid friendly, so he can play test with his kids, which makes total sense. When you have kids, even if they're your own, they're going to be brutally honest with you. So I'm like, it's kind of a nice built-in playtest group. So we had this game, and I forget the name of it, unfortunately, and I'm sorry, Jerry, but it was a memory aspect, but a diner. So the tiles are laid down like memory, and you get to flip over 5, and you're trying to match ingredients to diner orders that are across the top of the board, which are face-up cards. And then if you match them, then you get the card, and therefore you get the money, a.k.a. the tip that's attached to the card, and you're trying to end your shift with the most amount of money. So you get variable player powers and things like that with it. So like if you get 2 of the same ingredient, you could change them for any 1 ingredient and things like that. So it was a little bit more advanced than just memory, but it was good. It was a fun little game. Ethan loved it. So, I mean, he's doing it for kids, and it's target market. I mean, he hit it. So yeah, that's one game that besides my own, but yeah, I don't want to talk about my own stuff.
So. All right. Fair enough. How about you, TC?
I did play Riverboats like in 50 minutes on the first try, and it's like, it says 90 minutes on the box, and we all just sat down and played as fast as possible because Josh had to go to a thing, and so that was awesome. Sit down. Tiffany, our friend was actually there.
I got to see her like once. It was amazing.
It was crazy. I haven't seen her for a long time. So now she's back, and we played the first game we played was Riverboats, and we played it. It was just super fun because basically Riverboats is a game about farming. So
of course it is.
It's like, I just want to play every game like I played that Riverboats. If you play a game for the first time, the best way to play it is super fast without caring too much about what you're doing, because we could have gotten a rule or two wrong, which somewhere a little bit in there, we're like, oh, crap, there's one thing that we got wrong. But we went through the game in like 50 minutes. Now I want to play it again. And like, now that we have that first one out of the way, it's super fun now because now I know the rules. I don't have to relearn it. And I didn't spend like a gazillion hours learning that first game, you know, or trying to win it, you know. And I can't remember who won. Did I win? I might have won. I'm not sure. But at the same time, it was still fun. But that to the side, Riverboats is a game about farming for some reason. And then you have Riverboats in it. It's weird. But the main one was I got to play Gaia Project, which I really wanted to play. So we got to break it out. We played on Saturday morning at that big box. Daryl was gracious enough to give me a copy of Gaia Project. Since
I absolutely love the fact that he's like, I've been wanting to play Gaia Project, and when I gave it to you, you were like, what's this? And I was like, oh, it's, you know, I got this for you at Spiel, and you're like, oh, what is it? And I was like, it's the space version of Paramystica, and he went, oh!
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the name of it is. I just know hey, there's going to be a space Paramystica.
Oh, I want to play that. I just pictured you were like, as soon as I was going to, I was like, oh, as soon as I get this TZ, he's going to like flip out, and he was just like, what's this? I'm like, oh, come on.
I was there. There was no sunshine or angels singing or anything. Yeah, it was a very lackluster response. I didn't really understand what was going on until now. So
No, exactly. So it needed some time to percolate. But the second I knew what it actually was, then, yeah, of course. And I got to play it, and of course I like it. It's really good. It was really fun. I had a big headache the whole time I was playing it, but at the same time, I taught it to everybody. Everyone played. Everyone played the whole game. We sat there for, I think it was like a little over 3 hours playing the first game. And it's big, and it's unwieldy, and it's awesome. And it was fun. It was super fun. It was super Euro-y and mathy. And well, I guess not too mathy, but yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it a lot. So I would say, Yeah, see, that's the question. So I would say that if anybody likes Terra Mystica, they're going to like Gaia Project 2. But I think the thing that makes Gaia Project better than Terra Mystica for me is the tracks actually do stuff. Going up the track gives you bonuses that you use in the game, and that just makes it so there's six different new strategies you can try every time, and you're never going to get up. Like, I think Mario won by a lot, and he was able to get up to two of the tracks to the top, and really, like, he did well doing that. Like, yeah, so you get a lot of cool strategies going on. Loved it. So yeah, I want to play it again.
I saw you tweet it, and you were like, I don't know what's going on here, but I like what's happening, or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but I saw Gaia Project.
I think it was like Dan.
Oh, yeah. Something like that. What was the... Oh, no. Tiffany tweeted you two during Gaia Project, and you and Dan Halstead were just like it was a mind-blown moment. Dan, like, it had his head in his hands, and you're like going, oh, you know, this weird face, and I was like, this is an amazing moment because you don't know what's happening in the game.
Of course, yeah. So it's one of those, you know, it's moving pieces around on boards and stuff, and there's all kinds of stuff, and it's a lot but it's worth it. I guess it felt worth it. I would like to try it again. I mean, there's so much in that box again. So anyway.
Well, and as far as, like, testing, since we've both been talking about, they've been talking about Unpub games, we'll roll this all into one. So, testing, you got to play Maastricht, but yeah. Was there anything else that you played Unpub-wise, or was Maastricht the one test you got on the table? How'd it go?
I only got to play, like, a short game from Isaac Shalev, mm-hmm. and it was about flower petals, and it's not aimed towards me. I mean, it's like a math game aimed for like a kids market or like family market, and you know, for me it was just like, I don't know what's going on, but and so I don't think I really gave very good feedback, but at least maybe something. And then I really wanted to play American Steel. I got taught how to play, but we never played it.
Yeah, but, I wanted to play as well, and I hate I didn't get a chance to, but I'm gonna hit up Josh to play it. Josh Mills. Yep. So
I'll get to play it.
All right, let's see. So here's an amazing thing. So normally at conventions like this, unless we go to PresCon or maybe Origins, possibly Origins, I don't get to play big games at cons. I just don't have the time. I'm either running demos or back and forth, but I made the time. Eric Buscemi was going to play Forbidden Stars, and this was one that had been sitting on the shelf for quite a while. He wanted to get it down. He wanted to be able to play it, so he said there was a fourth slot open, and I said, let's do this. I want to play Forbidden Stars. For people who don't know what Forbidden Stars is, it's out of print now because Fantasy Flight has lost the rights to Games Workshop properties, but it is you might call it a 4X type of game, but basically you're one of the four factions in the Games Workshop Warhammer 40K universe, and it's just a massive game. It's going to take you at least 4 or 5 hours to play. It took us 5 hours to play. It was at a con. I sat there the whole time in open gaming playing it with Eric and Matthew Halstead and Craig from Botch Games, and it was so fun to be able to actually do that, to play a big game at a con. And it took us, like I said, 5 hours. I played as the orcs, and I had played Forbidden Stars. I own Forbidden Stars, and I played it about 4 times, and it was just good to jump back into. It's been a couple of years since I'd played. It took me a couple of rounds to get it under my belt, but that was one of the awesome times of being able to play at PAX Unplugged, because I don't ever really get to do that, but I made the commitment to do it. It was actually a little bit of a research type of endeavor for me, and I can't say why right at this moment. But as far as what I tested, got to do some testing of homebrewers. I did some demos of Legends of Sleepy Hollow, naturally. I got to teach Laser Riders. And, you know, I didn't get to play a ton of games at PAX Unplugged, but I got to meet a lot of people. Every now and then I would just see what was going on in a different booth. But the demos that I got to run of Legends of Sleepy Hollow while I was there were a ton of fun. And being able to put the latest build of Homebrewers on the table at the Unpub area and get so many people in. This one kid we were playing with, the last game that I demoed of Homebrewers, made the nastiest IPA I've ever seen anybody make. It had like 7 ingredients, and it was like, I could pull up a picture, and I probably
it's
should.
Like it's like a Dr.
IPAs
Pepper
are nasty
brew.
To begin with, so
yeah, they're right. Nasty base.
They start nasty to begin with, And here's what was in it. It was a milk, almond, honey, vanilla, champagne, watermelon, maple IPA.
Oh.
I don't even know if just two of those would be good together.
Yeah, milk did it.
I know. But that's the thing that we're like... And I mean, he scored pretty well off of this, which I thought was cool too, because the testing showing is like, if people want to make these crazy recipes, they can, and they can actually win with it. But we're just all laughing. He's having a blast. We're laughing because he's like out in the parking lot selling this junk IPA out of a truck. You know, it's just, it was pretty cool. The other one thing I'll say, since I was looking at the pictures, I did notice that Lost is getting a board game, and not just the one from Cardinal Games that really, really sucks. But it's supposed to be coming.
It's not a sequel to the last one?
It is not a sequel to the last one. Someone waited long enough for the Lost IP to be available at a decent price, and we'll see how it turns out.
Is it Gale Force 9? Because if it's not Gale Force 9, it'll have much reliability in the game.
It's not, but I want to see kind of what happens. Right. Really quickly, and I know that Leslie's probably getting tired because she's got to teach. Did PAX inspire you to create anything? Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
I've always had cockamamie ideas. Just nothing ever follows through. 4 years ago, well, no, probably 6 years ago, I wanted to do some kind of historical game.
Real quick, you don't have to go into details on the gameplay.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not going to. But on the Salem Witch Trials, well, you know, great. At the same time, there's four other people that are trying to, you know, peddle Salem Witch Trial games, and I kind of passed on that. So I was in my favorite city, and I kind of woke up on Sunday morning, and I don't know why, I just was thinking about this game and mechanics and how I could make it happen based on something around Philadelphia, something that I was passionate about and had done research and a project about in college. So I kind of sat on it and ruminated on it, and I was sitting there in the Unpub room thinking about it, and came home, and the next morning said something to Daryl. I was like, hey, there's this thing, and I pulled a book off a shelf, and we're talking about it, and I don't know. By the time we went to Massachusetts for Thanksgiving and came home, we actually have it kind of built out. So, you know, mechanics and colors and different things and cards. And, you know, of course I have, you know, the guru of a husband who was sitting silently in the car. I'm like, what are you thinking about the game? Yep. And he's thinking of all these different things about it. So I'm really excited about it. So it's the first one. I mean, we've been working on, you know, dice scrapers and our dice building tower game. But I told Daryl, I was just kind of the inception of that building and thinking, hey, this would be fun. And he's run with it. But this one I'm really excited about because I'm involved. It's the first time I've actually really come up with
this one is your game,
how it should play and the idea for it.
Yeah, I'm kind of helping you develop it, but it's your game.
Right. So I don't know. I think that there might be a couple people I'm going to see soon that I'll have to demo it and see and give some feedback. But I might actually have a space at Unpub to let it hit the table for a couple hours.
I like how vague you are right now. Yes. I'm really digging it. I do want to say that I love your theme because I think it is incredibly unique.
Can we know what theme it is?
Yeah, well, it's her call. I'm not...
Okay.
I'm following her lead here.
It's around, like, historical events that happen in Philadelphia.
Okay.
If that works.
So we have to sign an NDA?
No, not really. I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of...
She talked about Salem before, and then there was a slew of Salem games. So I think she's a little trepidatious, because this is a unique theme, and she doesn't want other people jumping on this one.
I don't think other people are going to jump on that theme. There was an epidemic that swept through Philadelphia several different times, and I'm focusing on, you know, the one date where a huge amount of people, 5,000 people died in Philadelphia. So.
You're spelling it out.
Yeah.
I was about to say, before you said that, luckily there were only a couple of historical things that happened in Philadelphia, so nobody ever be able to tell what was going on.
It's not signing the Declaration of Independence, it's not...
Is it
the War of 1812 or the burning down of buildings? Sorry,
the rescuing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. Yes. Or Rocky running up the stairs.
Or Rocky, yeah.
Or Rocky,
anything around that. Yeah. I don't know. It was just it's a major event that is kind of forgotten about Philadelphia history, and a time when our forefathers actually weren't so wonderful because they kind of picked up and left everybody there. So It's kind of, I don't know. I love them. Laughing. I'm such a nerd, but
I'm laughing because it's so obvious to me. But again, I've been reading so much about it in the last couple of days that
I'm a history nerd. So I teach American literature. So I kind of have to be. So that's part of it. Just American, you know, American history in general. So anyway. Yeah, I think I said it. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. It's exciting and it's kind of nervous. And I worry sometimes about sounding kind of
And it's really cool to have your best friend and wife like geek out over doing a game design. Whereas before, it's like, I need you to help me play test this game. Oh, okay, fine. And now it's like,
I really sound like that.
Okay, fine.
But now it's like, do we have it built? Can we play it? Can we play it now? Do we have it built? Like, where are we? Like, where's this? Where's that? And it's, I don't know. It's really cool. Like, it's okay. It's hot. It's really hot, guys.
I guess Daryl gets all giddy over, you know, deaths of 5,000 Philadelphians and the fever epidemic of
Wife's talking about pushing cubes gets you a little hot under the collar.
Oh God, I'm so sorry. This is the first and last time I'll be on the show. I'm really apologize.
All right, well, we're about to wrap this segment of the podcast up, but I'd like to just ask really quickly, TC, you're not going to make a gentrification of Old Philly game or anything?
No, and now I have a soap opera game, but unrelated to Philly.
Oh, I love it. I was going to say, I'm the only one that thought of something while I was there.
I wrote notes. I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah, that was a setup. I used to see the setup.
The important question, it's been mostly answered. Will you be back next year?
Yes.
Yes.
Easy yes. Easy yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine not doing this show. And we've run a little bit long, but let's talk about a couple of notable Kickstarters. I'm just going to wrap some things up here really quickly. Mars Open that I mentioned in the last podcast is still running. This is the little dexterity game from Bellwether Games that everybody's just been going gaga over. So it's still, I think it got about 8 days left on its campaign as of this podcast. So go and check that out. Evil High Priest, which I know Daryl is interested in. Don't snicker because it is basically another game. This is from Sandy Peterson, now doing Evil High Priest, which is essentially trying to awaken your elder god or ancient one from their slumber and unsealing elder signs to get them out, which many of you might be familiar with from the concept of what, Daryl?
Well, no, I was slightly distracted there because Sandy Peterson actually posted in the Fate of the Elder Gods forums.
Really? I didn't notice that.
Because someone made a thread called Will High Priest Dethrone Fate of the Elder Gods?
I had seen that, but I didn't know if there was a follow-up to it.
Yep. And, you know, pretty much the thing. I absolutely love Fate, but Sandy Peterson makes great games. Is this going to dethrone it? Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And so I've been reading it and kind of following along. And then to my surprise, Sandy actually replied, like posting the thing.
Okay.
And he said, and I'm quoting, "Neither game is staggeringly expensive. They do play quite differently. I like and respect Richard in all of his games, and I think he does mine as well. So I expect we both advise you to get both games. In the case of Evil High Priest, you can even get the print and play and try it out before you take the plunge." So I was like, what like the nicest way to say get both?
Get both.
If you already have this one, try the print and play of mine. You don't have to throw money down. And more or less saying, like, there's no reason why it has to be one or the other. And I very much agree with that. Like, there's zero reason why it needs to be one or the other.
No, I absolutely
that's so much classier than me.
Now, I have had, and I've read some, heard about some people that played it, a demo of it at PAX Unplugged. Mm-hmm. And they said it's far more lightweight than expected, or, you know, than what it looks like it should be. So it plays very quickly and very lightweight. And that it is completely different than Fate of the Elder Gods.
Yeah, Brian Fisher is one of those people who played it, and he talked to me about it because he knew he wanted to make a point, because he's a big Cthulhu Wars fan, and he loves Fate, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely agree with you that, I mean, Sandy's high class. Sandy's great, and he's known Richard for forever, and you know, obviously they've been in the board game space for a long time, and I absolutely 100% agree. It's like, this is not that expensive of a production, especially if you just go with the base game. Now obviously there's a lot of add-ons where you can get tons of plastic thrown into the box, and if you're a huge fan of something like this, you can get all the different plastic bits. But I think it's like $49 for the base game. Yeah, $49 for the base game. And obviously you got to print and play, like you mentioned before. So if you're not going to, you don't want to pour a ton of money in to get huge amounts of add-ons, lots of different plastic, it's not that expensive to get into the game, and it is different enough. I mean, when I saw it came out, I was like, I'm totally interested in it.
I totally agree. The only thing that freaked me out a little bit was, like, the whole, if people haven't heard the story, the whole idea for Fate of the Elder Gods kicked into my head because I played another game where you play the evil cultist trying to summon the Elder God, Kingsport Festival, and I thought that game was terrible. And
so you thought the same thing. Now somebody said Fate of the Elder Gods is terrible, so
I could do a better version of this kind of thing. And so, like, I knew everyone, like, oh my god, did Sandy Peterson hate our game? And he's just like, I could do better than that. I'm like, oh man, that would make me feel like I mean, well, there's your bleep.
Yeah, there's
so my bleep. It's just that's immediately where my mind went. I'm like, oh man, Sandy hates our game.
No, I'm pretty sure this was in development at probably even before we put Fate of the Elder Gods on Kickstarter. But
yeah.
So anyway, check that out. That's called Evil High Priest. That is by Sandy Peterson, and that's all you need to know. The next one on my list is called Human Era. This is a little play on words, which I love. It's Human Era, ERA instead of ERROR. Get it? You guys get it? Human Era instead of Human Error.
Mm-hmm. I actually don't get that one. That one's that's the opposite. Are you supposed to get that?
I get it. You know why? It's because of time travel and screwing up with time. So there are a bunch of humans who devised a time device and are flying through time, and of course it's malfunctioning because it is built by humans. So it is not only the human era, because it's time and era, but also because there's also human errors into building a time travel device. See, you get it now? Get it? Okay. I know next to nothing about this game other than it's insanely pink. There are some quotes by a couple of people that I respect in the industry talking about how it's fun to play. It's only $25. And it's basically a social deduction game, and it's pretty much where, you know, there are a group of people who are humans, and there are, you know, a few different people who are different races, and they have different abilities, and you're rolling a die where you kind of come out of this time warp into different eras, which have, from what I can tell, variable mission or win situations, and then you vote on the people to go on the team, just like you would Resistance or something else, and so it's, again, another twist on the whole group dynamic social deduction type of game. It plays from 4 to 10 players. It's, again, like I mentioned, only $25 more, or you can play $40 more for the Kickstarter edition plus the gold edition. It just, you know, seems like something.
I like the look of it.
Yeah, I do too.
All right. I have one extra to add to it.
Please. That'd be awesome.
It's a little self-serving.
That's okay.
And somewhat related to Don't Get Eated. But Keymaster Games has a new game up called Claims of Gold, which is up here, and it is a 30-minute worker meeple placement game. So if you want a, like, I mean, 30 minutes is pretty short. So if you like having a light entryway Euro game about mining for gold, and it looks pretty gorgeous from what I can tell from looking at it, but I wouldn't expect anything less. So it looks very, very nice on the table. But it looks pretty sweet, and it's, you know, it's a self-serving thing because they're going to be doing Don't Get Eated then for next year. So hopefully you can throw them a little bit of money here, and then they'll come back with an awesome game, Claims of Gold, and, you know, you'll get, you know, a new version of Don't Get Eated next year sometime.
Maybe.
So think for my future. And buy this game. At least, you know, buy like 10 copies. You don't have to go too crazy.
I mean, you know, if you like tiles and
honestly, it looks very, very Snowdonia-esque.
It kind of does.
Line of a line of places that you place your workers, and then you resolve that line in order. I mean, I guess that's a lot of different worker placement games, but this being like, it looks like there's, you know, even a weak track. So, as in, not weak.
It's totally weak.
Not as in strong.
It's totally weak. Time, W-E-E-K, timeline. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I like the aesthetic of it, too. So.
No, the aesthetic's cool. I mean, obviously, they know good art, you know, because we... Yeah. You know, have championed the art structure of their games before.
Yep, pretty straightforward. So,
all right.
If you like the entryway Euro, this could be that. This could be the new one.
It is.
It's a small box.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a board. It's got a bunch of tiles. It's got a bunch of cards. But it's only $29 or more on Kickstarter right now. They are at $7,814 of their $20,000 goal with 17 days to go. So this is definitely a project that could use your help. So go and check it out. Daryl, just really quickly, have you been swindled any since last time when we were on the podcast?
No. I mean, yes, but I'm kind of waiting to see what happens right now.
No. What?
So a while ago, I was raving about this thing that I was backing called the meter.
This is your
wireless Bluetooth
thing.
Thermometer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got the block, which is like charges four probes and the whole thing. So, because, you know, I'm a big smoker of meats, and so I typically do multiple things. It's still delayed, and they're not giving an estimate, and I think it's now 4 years?
It's been a long time.
I'm going to double check here, but, like, I've asked for a refund because I actually got a one called the Fireboard, and Fireboard is freaking amazing. And so that's what I'm using now. And so if this comes in, if this ever shows up, I don't know what the heck I'm going to do with it because I'm in love with this new device. The new device is far more expensive than this one. But yeah, you know, all the updates have been like, hey, we're working hard on it. Here's a little joke. Ha, ha, ha. And hey, check out this other Kickstarter campaign by our friends. And like, there's no more like the recent update. Hey, when's the block shipping? We're not quite ready to provide a definitive ship date for the meat block. Thank you. Take my money. So it just kind of pissed me off. So like I said, I asked for a refund, and they were like, well, we already ordered parts and everything, so we can't give you a refund. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. So yeah. I'm kind of in it until it shows up, whenever the hell it shows up. I'm not happy about it, but...
To continue the sour thing, can we all just agree that Kickstarter's new logo is the worst thing I've ever seen?
It got hung by a bee, dude. Give it some slack.
I know.
Poor thing.
I don't know what's happening to it. Yeah,
I don't know. It's the color and the thing. I think they just put it up as a joke. I don't think they intended this to be an actual logo.
They also did this whole redesign of the site, which was unveiled overnight, not telling anybody either. And it's just weird. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't notice. I don't notice the other part as much, but like,
but no, the Kickstarter logo
is. It's a little, but the logo is. Oh,
yeah, logo is.
And usually, like people, you could go like, okay, well, you're just being weird because you haven't seen it for a while. It's like, no, the colors It looks really weird on my.
Well,
it's weird.
Also, Kickstarter green is Kickstarter green. Like, they've established that for, like, 7 years now, and then all of a sudden
they had two different Kickstarter greens, right? They changed it.
Well,
at one point,
it
was like Kelly, and then it was like a mint, and now it's
like Dirt Kelly or something. I don't know what it is.
Oh, it's like terrible. There's blue in it. It's not even green anymore.
It's Philadelphia Eagles green, from what I can tell right here.
It is not midnight green, not something the Philadelphia Eagles. Just because your Cowboys just...
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, you're...
Oh my God, you insulted me more than the Eagles beating the Bears.
I'm sorry, you're Bears.
Cowboys.
Just, wow.
Jeez.
You're Ravens.
You're off the freaking podcast calling them the Cowboys.
I'm sorry-ish.
No. Well, you know that's a fate worse than death, being the Cowboys. Anyway, let's move on to Dice Hate Me Games news really quickly. So, not much here right now. Obviously, it's November. We're moving into the holidays, but we're settling in for the long winter's production of Legends of Sleepy Hollow. That's the big thing that's on my agenda right now. There is lots... Sure. Just mine. Yeah,
just
Daryl,
you.
Yeah, Daryl, you don't have much to do with it. It's fine. You're only the graphic designer. We need to have a big powwow in the next week or two to get things. So anyway, lots of development work going on with homebrewers, which I mentioned in the Unplugged section, and getting ready to set the 2018 schedule, which we'll be talking about big time when I head to St. Louis to the Greater Than Games headquarters for holiday party time. Also, I'll mention that the Sentinels RPG starter kit was released at PAX Unplugged and sold out fast, like super fast. They were also doing tons of demos during the show. Huge reception for that. Lots of people enjoying their time playing that. I'm going to try to procure some of that for us to play with Daryl, because he's, again, never once played a role-playing game, so it would be fun to be able to do that with him.
It's not as cruel as, like, having a friend that buys you, like, I don't know, the 5th edition of the Dungeons & Dragons Player's Handbook, and then proceeds to never schedule a time to teach you how to play or wasn't to use
that
the damn thing.
Wasn't that last Christmas?
I'm just saying, I'm not spending specifics.
That wasn't me. By the way, that was not me. That was not me.
It was not Chris.
I don't know why you would do that, Chris.
So messed up.
Don't understand.
It definitely was not me.
Oh, which, by the way, completely forgot to mention this in our PAX Unplugged discussion previously, but we all did run into Jessica Wade at PAX Unplugged.
Oh, yes, totally. Yes. Very briefly, but we did see Jessica again. Yeah, it was great to see Jessica, and we'll see if she's able to make it to the holiday shindig, the annual Dice Hate Me holiday shindig, but yeah, it was great. I mean, obviously, her mom lives in Philly, so we expected we might be able to see her, but we saw her briefly on Friday. I'm not sure if she was there for any of the days of the con, so...
I think it was only one day.
I think it was a one-day appearance.
Yeah. One-day only Jessica appearance.
Yep.
Yeah, she had a three-day badge, but she was only there for Saturday, which was, I was like, oh, that's odd.
But yeah, it happens. I mean, she's got a busy schedule, so anyway.
No, I know. I wanted to ask her, but I didn't, and I'm kicking myself. If she, did you pre-order a scarf? Can I get it?
Yes, shoot her an email. Yeah, see what she says. All right, really quickly, Daryl, Unpub News.
We are full steam planning ahead. If you're up for sponsoring Unpub 8 and want to get that in before taxes at the end of this year, now's the time to do it. Reach out to us at sponsors@unpub.net, and we will give you ways to throw money at us that will help with your taxes, because we are a 501 nonprofit. So you do get some nice, decent tax deductions, y'all. So keep that in mind when you're trying to figure out where you got all that extra money to stow away. We'll take it and help you.
Yes.
All right, TC, what about you? You got any news?
No, I don't have any news right now. Psh, it's the holidays. I'm on holiday.
Well, you know what, TC?
There'll be more news later, I'm sure.
You know what we always say in the news business? No news is good news. Well, that's it for this episode of The State of Games. We'll be back next time with even more great board game discussion, and we love hearing from all of you. So if you have any topics or new segments you'd like to hear about, we can add them to the show. You can email those ideas to thestateofgames@gmail.com or tweet them at @thestateofgames. You can also go to dicehateme.com and comment on the podcast, and or join Guild 1903 on boardgamegeek.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter at @dicehateme and on Instagram. What about the rest of you?
On Twitter, I'm at @chalkboardgamer.
You can find me on Twitter at @getlouder.
And I'm Puppy Shogun, and you can check me out there.
Beautiful. Until next time, I'm Dice Hate Me.
This is Chalkboard Gamer.
This is Get Louder.
This is Puppy Shogun.
Saying thanks for listening, and may all your rolls be sixes.